Cambria Community Service Districts, and if you would all rise and join me in the flag salute, please.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Let the record show that all five directors are present. We didn't have any closed session last month, so there's no report on closed session. I see there is a representative of the Sheriff's Department, so
there are.
There's two of them out there.
We're in trouble.
We got some big cheese and local cheese.
Two cheeses.
Little cheese.
Good afternoon. Happy New Year to you all. Hope you had a good holidays. Although most likely unnecessary, I want to introduce Senior Deputy Todd Steeb. After the taking of office by Sheriff Parkinson, I received direction from the Undersheriff that as Todd, who has been resident deputy for how many years, Todd?
Nine.
9 years here in Cambria. He will attend the North Coast community meetings for the department, and then he and I will address any issues that come up out of those meetings. So I just want to say Todd will be doing the meetings from now on unless he's not available, in which case I will be back. I certainly have enjoyed our short relationship, but I'm sure we'll be speaking again any probably sooner than later. So, Todd?
Thank you.
Sure. Good afternoon. Some of the things that I spoke about at last night's meeting with the North Coast Advisory Council, I'm just going to kind of go over those again, and then if you have any concerns, I'd be happy to address them. Just want to let you know, obviously, this is the first or the second meeting I've attended now with Sheriff Parkinson as the new elected sheriff. I had a meeting with him recently. He informed me that he has roughly 40 meetings that he is attending per month, so he will try to make it to this meeting as his time allows. As the commander said, I'll be coming to the meetings regularly, but the sheriff does want to make an attempt to get up here and speak with you. The sheriff did say that we will be the leading agency for the county. Any issues that the Cambrians might have, the Services District, the North Coast Advisory Council, San Simeon, can be brought to the Sheriff's Department. Not only will we attempt to address those situations, but if they are not in our jurisdiction, in other words, they're in California Highway Patrol or planning or something, we will take the lead on that. We will liaison, and we will get back to you. I will go and find the answer. If I don't have it, I will go to the commander, the sergeant, as hard as I need to go to try to get that and then work with you and bring it back to you. Also, they wanted to know what the board basically wants from us in the meetings, if there's anything that we're not bringing to the table. Statistics, I know that we're working with the local papers now. I was just speaking with Kathy about the fact that our department is going to be releasing the logs to them to address calls for service, medicals, burglaries, thefts, things like that. So last month we had 53 calls for service in Cambria, and then on top of that, 35 medical calls. So it kind of gives you a general idea of we're handling one or two calls a day for service up here that generate reports. The department as a whole handles about one paper call per 10 calls. So for every 10 calls, we're generating paper. So as you see our statistics go through 53 calls, that means we probably handled, you know, roughly 530 calls in the general area, but 53 of those generated some type of paperwork. We wanted to work with the community before it gets to a 911 call. So if you guys have issues, you know, parking issues, something like that downtown, we're willing to work with you on those before they become an issue where, you know, they need to call 911 because someone's in someone's face regarding an issue like that. So please don't hesitate. Even if it's a small thing, we'd rather deal with one or two small things a week than wait for them to become a bigger problem. The resident deputy position will continue. Sheriff Parkinson is looking at expanding that out in some other communities. He thinks it's a great way, working relationship with the department, for you guys to have one direct connect to be able to take those issues back to the commander and see if we can work on it from a co-station standpoint. And then one of the other things that was brought up last night at the North Coast Advisory Council was trespassers. We've had some issues in the last year or so. The Sheriff's Department's been handling them correctly. They have been handled at other levels in different ways, if I put that politely and correctly. A good example would be that there was a trespasser that was on a piece of property here in Cambria. That trespasser was detained by the rancher, addressed by Deputy Kramer and myself, arrested, taken in, and subsequently taken to mental health. That subject was released and then had further issues later on down the line, most recently in December. So we will continue to work with the community. We wanted to let everybody know if you do have trespassers on your property, don't confront them directly as far as if you feel that you're in a danger, but they do need to be notified per Penal Code Section 602 by an owner or a designee or a deputy sheriff that they're not welcome on the property before we can do any law enforcement activity. If you guys have any questions regarding posting for ranches, I recommend that you contact Brandy Swain with our Rural Crimes Unit. Or Deputy Pete Kramer, who's the rural crimes deputy up here, they can give you the correct codes and signage, four signs per mile. There's a bunch of different things that you need to jump through to make sure that things are correct so that the deputies have a good leg to stand on when we go up there, that they don't have some way to get around, circumnavigate the law, saying that they didn't have the proper signage. So any questions, anything I can address while I'm here?
Any questions from the board?
Okay, we'll see you next month then. Thank you very much.
You always give a good and complete report, so we're not. I don't think there's anything additional that you need to do. You do a good job as
okay.
It is. Thank you.
Great, thank you.
Okay, we'll move on to item number 3. We don't have any acknowledgments or presentations that I know of, so we'll move on to number 4, which is agenda review. Is there any additions or deletions, or does anybody wish any of the consent items pulled for discussion? Seeing none, we'll move to public comment, and I have two requests for public comment, so we'll Tina Dickerson. Tina?
Good afternoon, Board. Tina Dickerson, Cambria. I would like to say welcome to the two new board members. I didn't have an opportunity as I wasn't here last month. You both, I believe, ran on the issue and the promise of fiscal accountability and transparency. Those are seem to be words now that are almost meaningless. It seems everybody runs on, oh, I'm going to be more fiscally responsible, I'm going to be accountable, there'll be transparency. We haven't really seen as near as much as we'd like to, and I'm hoping that the two of you will add to that on this board. And I also want to, I did watch the December 13th meeting, and Mr. Berenger, I appreciate the fact that you offered your home, your porch, on the Wednesdays prior to the Thursday CCSD board meeting. I will take some opportunity at some point to come and visit and discuss with you issues that I feel need to be maybe brought up with you and certainly with the board. But I thank you for that. I noticed, I think, two or three times you mentioned how you would like to see things moving forward that where it creates more openness and transparency with the public. I would like to see each and every one of you follow up because, as far as I'm concerned, there are a number of areas where we are not being informed of what's going on. And it is becoming extremely frustrating. I have emailed at least 3 times to Kathleen Anderson, the project manager for the Army Corps of Engineers on the desal project, for the test results from September 22nd and 23rd. She had promised me verbally at the beach that day, we are having these tests done, they will be done, there will be accelerated testing, and you will hear within 2 to 3 weeks after we get the test results. Not a single word has been uttered about those test results. I've contacted the Coastal Commission, and they said, yes, that they heard that in two of those borings that their bedrock was hit at just some number of feet down, 30, 40, 24, 30, 40 feet down. We've never been told that here. When are we ever going to know what happened at the beach on 22nd and 23rd of September regarding the testing that was done? So if you all run on transparency, openness, and telling us the truth, I'd like to hear it, because you've been asked many, many times. So has the Army Corps. Through FOIA requests, still no answer. So I thank you for your promises, but I'd like to see promises kept. Thank you.
Thank you. Next is Amanda Rice.
Thank you, President Clift. Happy New Year to everybody. Get first thing out of the way. The number of days since the moratorium was declared is 3,374. If you convert that into seconds, it would take you nearly an hour to speak each one of those days. I was very glad to hear at the last meeting Jim Beringer requesting that we look at the moratorium and its appropriateness still, considering all of the improvements that have been made to the system since the declaration of the Code 350 emergency in 2001. Last month at public comment, Valerie Bentz asked some specific questions that are responded to in this month's GM's report, which I very much appreciate. But I think the questions also indicate that almost all of them were on questions of policy. Why is this the policy? Well, they were given factual answers, but this community, I think, would really like to have a bigger, broader discussion about what are the policies that are going to affect Cambria in the coming years, because there are things that are being decided based on current policy that are going to affect this community long after the current board is gone. And I think a town hall meeting of some sort, perhaps with a professional facilitator — there are probably numerous professional facilitators even in town that would probably do it for free — where people who would like to have their voice heard, who maybe don't feel the same way as the board, have a chance to speak their minds and feel like they are heard. Just because the five people on the board have one set of policies they are following doesn't mean that that's what everybody agrees with. And a lot of times in democracy, being heard, it makes people feel like they've actually had a say in what's going on in their community, which is, if we don't have that, it's not really a democracy. So I look forward to the discussion about the goals for 2011, and let's have a good year.
Thank you, Madam. I have one other request here from Jeff Helen. Jeff, is this regarding desal or just public comment? I wasn't sure what you were.
It's regarding desal and a continuation of a question that I asked.
Okay, well, we'll want to take it up when we talk about desal after the manager's report. There's a report on desal and things, so I'll put you there. Is that okay?
If I could, I would like to speak this now. I have a reason for doing this. I became a secretary of the computer club. And I need to go there about it.
I don't know. Obligations. You guys moved up your meeting. So. Jeff Hillman. Last month I asked the question, how much have we spent to date on the desal project? And just a side note, this is not a pro or con on desal as an issue. This is really an issue for Cambrians for fiscal responsibility. So I was told $3 million. That's what I remember. You guys, $3 million that you spent to date. However, it came into my possession a letter from our engineer. I don't want to unpronounce the name wrong, Mr. Greshens, This is dated May 11th, 2009. It's to the Army Corps of Engineers, to Mr. Greg Boghessian. And it was about project cost and, you know, the making credit for the remuneration. But according to this letter, and according, and tell me if it's wrong, tell me if there's some mistake here, it says that we had spent $3,421,253. And according to the spreadsheet that's attached to this, that was what we have already spent up through, just for consultants, up through 1999. So the $3 million, you know, after seeing this, I'm a little weary that I'm not able to understand exactly how much we've spent to date. I believe that the community has a right, an actual legal right, to know precisely how much we've spent to date on the DCEL project.
And we'll take that up in the discussion.
Uh-huh. The last thing I'd like to just say here is that if that didn't include the last 11 years, obviously the $3 million figure is, you know, way, way, way off on this thing. I'd like clarification on this discrepancy between a $3 million figure that was put out to the public and the reality that we had already spent $3.5 million. This does not include staff time, our lawyers' times, or anything else. So if you start adding up the numbers, and the last thing I wanted to say was, and you guys are business people, I am too, I totally relate, and I was just hoping so much that you guys would bring your business value, your business acumen into this, and you have to some great extent, I don't misconstrue, but I know of no business that's, you know, private or publicly held, not a public corp. I mean, I don't know of any business on earth that that doesn't keep a running tally on how much they've spent on the biggest project they've ever endeavored on. So let's have some facts here, you know, some facts that jive with, you know, the publication, the letters that I'm seeing here. This is a real concern. Cambrians for Fiscal Responsibility. How much have we spent so far in reality, including the allocation of staff and management time and legal staff time, too? That would be in what we would call generally accepted accounting principles, GAAP. That's the standard of which, you know, audits should be adhered to give the public some honesty and some candor on what is really going on. Thank you for letting me speak right now.
Thank you for your comments. I don't have any other requests to speak under public comment, so we will close that and we'll move to the manager's report. General Manager Rudock.
Okay, thank you. We've attached the Federal Advocate's report for December to this General Manager's report, and then last night Bob Gressens received the quarterly report through January 11th of this year from the U.S. Army Corps. And so you've got copies here. We've got some at the back, and we'll actually provide it as an addendum to this agenda package like we did their last one. So it'll be out on the website probably the beginning of next week, if not tomorrow. The holiday notice is for February 21st. It's for the President's Day holiday, so we have our 24-hour answering service that will be picking up calls. I made the mention of the LAFCO election that Merle Clift was elected as a special district representative for the Slo County LAFCO. And that's where he previously served as an alternate, just bringing back the results of that election. And then in that regard, as far as the IWMA, which is the Waste Management Association nomination that you all put forward as for Merle Clift, he actually withdrew from that election since he was successful at the LAFCO election. I've published the Mission Country Disposal 2011 cleanup days. The spring cleanup is scheduled for April 25th through 29th. And the fall cleanup is scheduled for September 26th through September 30th. And this is the time where everyone who is a Mission Country customer within CCSD boundaries can put out excess trash, recycling, or land waste. And if there's any larger items, actually Mission Country, you can coordinate with them. If you do it in advance and for a small nominal fee, they'll actually pick that up on your regular trash day as well. We've attached to this report the PROS Commission vacancy. There is one since Michael Thompson was elected. He's now no longer on the PROS Commission. So we have attached the notice, which has already been published in the Tribune, and it's run today in the Cambrian. and that's per the bylaws for the Parks, Recreation, Open Space Commission. And then we put an application here. They're out on the website, and they're in the administration offices. The deadline for applying is the February 15th, and you all will probably be looking at the Pros Commission recommendation for that replacement at the March meeting. And the next meeting is scheduled for March 1st for the Pros Commission. So moving on to, I want to mention on page 6 of the Vanskoyuk report, there was some concern that there might be a change in the cost sharing, as you recall, during the last legislative session, and Greg Burns was concerned about that. But you'll see in that third paragraph that it's in the fiscal year 2011 omnibus and the continuing resolution that passed, that language wasn't included. That means the cost share is staying the same and remaining for our project. However, Greg does make comment, and he and I had a conference call this week, that there is still that potential with regard to the Federal Deficit Commission that they're going to be looking at all the U.S. Army Corps projects, and any of those that don't meet their core values and their core mission, those may be subject to being eliminated. So, you know, we may be on that chopping block at that time, and I want to make sure you have that information, and we will be following that closely through Greg Burns, and we will keep you guys apprised as that comes up. So I want to make mention from the Vanskoyuk report of that information. Moving on to the finance report. Today you'll get the audit presentation for the fiscal year that ended June 30th, 2010. Bob Crosby will be here around 1 o'clock. We're working on the second quarter revenue and expenditure report, and actually we'll be presenting that at the February 24th meeting, and that will be in place of a mid-year budget review. We're doing that because there's really not much to adjust, and we can handle it through this process rather than going through preparing what I consider to be actually a second budget. And so we have, we're finishing that up, Al Labossiere and I, in the next few weeks, and that will be presented next month. He notes there were no disbursements in excess of $100,000 during the month of December. The LAIF balance, which is the Local Agency Investment Fund, as of December 31st of 2010, was $5,023,432. And Al notes that the last time the LAIF fund exceeded $5 million was April 30th of 2008. This doesn't include the interest revenue, and he notices the increase of $975,000 from November 30th, 2010, and the increase of $603,175 from December 31st, 2009. When you go down now this month and you see the LAIF balance per the audit that's going to be presented today, there were some adjustments made, and you'll see what were adjusted were the weight. You'll see an added two lines that have numbers in them now, wastewater capital and wastewater operations. And anytime these numbers are adjusted, they're per the audited financial statements. So there were some surpluses, and this is where they're showing up, so that they can be itemized now, and you see that, and that's based on former board direction and how that is. The capital is mostly for the items that are, you know, that are going to be budgeted for wastewater, and you'll hear today from Bob Crosby more specifics on that. The other thing we changed on page 11 were these internal loans. Staff's recommending, and it's certainly the board's direction and decision and determination to change, that if there were any capital working revenue, that we would work those toward any of these outstanding loans. So what we did this year, and you'll see in the notes, is first of all, we busted out the loans per department. So there's water and there's wastewater. So it's easier to track and follow, okay? And then the things that have either been compensated with regard to the working capital, as you note in Al's report, basically meaning the project's, the activity's been completed and there's no more an outstanding loan, then we've entitled that completed activity, okay? So it doesn't still sit up in a pending activity, and you all see what is actually still out there and still yet to potentially be borrowed from general funds. In particular, on water, there was just a portion as a result of the water activity and the working capital that was available that was actually able to go toward paying a portion of that 166, or in other words, we wouldn't have to borrow the full 166. We might only have to borrow the 157 as a result of the financial statements that are going to be presented today during the audit. The completed activities you see in water were the SCADA and the West Main Street overlay. Same with wastewater. They actually now have no more obligations to the general fund. Those were completed as a result of the working capital that was available as of the financial audit. So that SCADA and the West Street, West Main Street overlay, those are done. So there's now no outstanding loans owed by the wastewater department. And these are from previous board action where you all approved those. So that's new to the report. If there's another way you want to see it or you have any input on that, please feel free. I thought it was easier to look at it this way so you can see progress rather than them just all being lumped into one list and maybe not going off yet for a little while until, you know, we get through the audit process and then into the next fiscal year. Al attaches to the back to the external debt spreadsheet that he attaches every month, and then we'll be talking about the one item with regard to the Oshkosh fire pumper truck today. Moving on to the fire chief's report, unless there's any questions about that stuff, is Mark reports that the department has received a Department of Homeland Security grant for some training needs with regard to structure collapse rescue training. This is a $51,000 grant, and it pays for staff, 3 rescue courses. And while someone might say, hey, we don't have any structures here, why would we be doing this? Because of our remote location, there's still some activities, and because of some of the styles and construction of homes here, it could come in handy, and it's 100% paid by the grant. And that includes any backfill of shifts if these folks are off for training. So this was a good grant, and they've got time and a captain who's eager and looking for all grant opportunities for the fire department.
Was there any cost sharing in that
No.
grant, or it's 100% grant?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And then the 2-week, mostly those training grants do tend to be that way. The 2-week period of the storm event, the first part of this year, Mark notes for the fire department, the busiest day was December 29th. 14 emergency responses, 2 calls for medical aid, and 12 weather-related responses, and that's trees into houses, cars, power lines down, and road closures. And then you'll see there where we actually applied for federal relief as a part of the Slo County Office of Emergency Management Disaster Declaration for $28,000 worth of damage that was incurred as a result of the sanitary sewer overflow, which you'll hear during our utilities manager's report, Jerry Gruber. So we'll hear back from them if that stuff is eligible, and that was for some damage at the wastewater treatment plant and to the manhole that had to be repaired and all of that. So, and that includes staff time as well for those of us who were out here on that Sunday, and the overtime for the staff in the sewer department, the wastewater department. And then he's just giving us a status report with regard to that fuel break along the Cavell, Ralph Cavell property. It's a collaborative effort among the property owner, Ralph Cavell, the Nature Conservancy, CAL FIRE, and our fire department. And so they're looking to secure some federal grant funding that provides opportunities for defensible space for the homeowners and the businesses along that boundary. And this process actually started in the year 2000. So 11 years later, it looks like we're finally making some progress. Mark attaches the stats for the fire department. And we're at the utilities manager's report, and I'm going to present Jerry Gruber, and he will be here to present his utilities manager's report and answer questions with regard to the sanitary sewer overflow that occurred January 2nd. Jerry?
Thank you, Tammy. President Clift and board members, attached is my utility manager's report. I went into quite a bit of detail regarding the incident that occurred on January 2nd near Shamal Park in reference to a sewer overflow, a sanitary overflow that occurred. And I thought it would be appropriate to address any questions that the board may have with regards to this incident that occurred. And I know I've spoke briefly with Director D'Amico, and I've fielded some answers to some of the questions via email. One thing that I would like to discuss briefly is I listed some short-term and some long-term goals that I think we should try to the best of our ability with limited resources do. But with regards to the long-term, on number 2 on page 17 of the agenda, it says video camera, the entire CSD collection system. I think that's unrealistic. I think that, as I indicated earlier, we need to determine through lift station run times and through smoke tests, you know, where our problem areas are. It's been my experience, and I've been doing this for 30 years, that historically sometimes you'll have a situation where a great deal of water is entering a system in a specific area. we used to use the terminology mother load for that. And I think overwhelmingly that's probably our problem, not a great deal of small areas, but probably 5 or 6, 7, 8, 10 areas in some of the canyons that probably have had manholes that have been have not been inspected for several years. So so to clarify my recommendation under long-term, under number two, it really should say that we strategically need to video areas that are determined to be problematic and systematically, you know, approach those areas as we have the available resources to do so. Today, under short-term objectives, two of the wastewater staff are out inspecting the system, and that's something we're going to do every Thursday. Thursdays are usually lift station days where they check the system. It's where two people go out, and we have a lot of confined space, so they check the run times. You know, ultimately, if and when we get SCADA up and running, which I'm hopefully we will, phase two identifies the collection system and the wastewater collection system. And then that would be the installation of the monitoring equipment for the run times on the lift stations. And so under current operating protocol, it's difficult to really home in on those run times. If you had a SCADA system that was up and running, you could evaluate minute by minute, day by day, hour by hour, your lift station run times. And then that would help you determine some of your problem areas, your highest INIL coming to your lift stations where your lift station run times will reflect that. So that's pretty much everything. I wanted to learn from this experience. I think that it was a perfect storm. We had a tremendous amount of rain in a relatively short period of time. Not to minimize the situation at all, but every agency throughout the Central Coast experienced what we experienced. However, with that being said, I think there's some things that we can learn from it. That's why I'm here. That's why I'm working closely with the general manager and the staff and to reduce the probability of, not eliminate, but reduce the probability of something like this happening again. So I'll be more than happy to answer any questions at this time.
Any questions?
I have a question. The Wallace Group, I know several years ago that was the contract was made for this management program. What is it? What in fact have they done at this state?
Yeah. What the director is referring to is the SSMP, which is a sanitary sewer management plan. It is a mandated plan, at least the first phase of it, as I understand it, through the Regional Water Quality Control Board and the State Water Resources Control Board. The first phase of that sanitary sewer management plan is to be adopted by the board. That has not been done yet. Back in 2009, we allocated $5,000 for the Wallace Group to be spent on phase one. And based on emails and the research that I've done, we were almost there. There was a dialogue back and forth that we had a finished product and that we were going to bring that to the board for approval. One of the elements within the phase one of the SSMP is a chain of command and who responds and who calls the proper authorities and things like that. That obviously needs to be updated. Brian Bode no longer works here. We're going to be going through some transition periods with our wastewater staff, so that's going to need to be updated. I'm currently working with Tammy Nichols right now and have asked her to provide me with a proposal, if you will, for phase two and phase three. I don't have a comfort level yet that is necessary for us to have to adopt. I know that by state mandates we have to adopt phase one. I'm about 75% done reading the draft SSMP and making my comments on it because, like many unfunded state mandates, I think for a jurisdiction as small as we are, it's unrealistic with our limited resources financially to try to meet all the standards that they established within that program. So I would ask that I could have a little more time to get up to speed on the SSMP, especially if phase one, phase two, and phase three are required. If they're not, then we can discuss whether we want to move forward and fund that. But phase one is almost complete. I'm revising it. I'm working with Tammy Nichols from the Wallace Group, and that will need board approval. And that pretty much just identifies the organizational chain, who is going to respond to sanitary overflows, and proper reporting protocol. Phase two and three is really detailed. It goes into pretreatment programs. It goes into enforcement mechanisms as it relates to making sure that grease traps are maintained, that we have a pretreatment program. Again, you know, there's the balance between what we can do and what we can't do. Just like cammering all of our sewer lines is unrealistic, and we just don't have the funds to do that. I hope I answered.
Yeah, thank you.
Any other questions?
Well, I appreciate, and I did meet with Jerry, and I want the public for transparency to understand my comments to Jerry. Two things. One, you just mentioned the SSMP, which is the initial plan filing with the state. There is, you do need to show a chain of command, chain of response, okay? It's a snapshot. People can retire and leave. People can get hit by trucks. They can go find another job. Let's get it done. We have people. Fill the names in. And while I hear, apparently, was it now, what, a year and a half then? Since it was given to them to do?
There are certain elements that have a time-sensitive time frame, and phase
one was
to be completed
in 2009. When did they get engaged to do a $5,000 report, and it's at least a year? Okay?
Correct.
All right. If, I would like to set some, you know, we're supposed to set goals, I think, and the public wants to hear transparency. If it has to come to the board, I think a draft should be ready in no less than 30 days. And it should be on the board's calendar no less than 60 days. I will tell you from my professional background, and when I was at the Los Banos office, we used to do these for different municipalities along the Route 5 corridor. We had an essentially what would be called like a paralegal, a para engineer do it, and it would be done in a week and a half, 2 weeks. It would be filed. Now, the long-term plan, the implementation of what all the other supplemental things that need to be done over the next few years or several years is a much more onerous and costly issue, number one. That's why we should get prices. And then it's up to the board and the community to decide how much they want to invest to meet these requirements. And since you brought it up and people heard it, pretreatment. I don't know. This is a fairly residential community, although we have Tin City. I don't know that we have any electroplating going on down there. I don't think there's anybody using waste vats and dye vats. The issue is we look at our treatment plant, and if our treatment plant has not lost its biological activity because of acids and other, we don't have an industrial. So there's a lot of things in the what's put out in a book that covers the city of Los Angeles and the Cambria community that we would not look at. So I think when you are discussing with Wallace Group, make sure that they understand that you have experience and we have a certain size. And to give us a proposal, if they give us a proposal on a Los Angeles-type study, then they're not going to get it because we're not going to spend a lot of money on this in the sense that we're not going to spend money on things we're never going to use. And I think experience and background and our own knowledge of this the community is that. But we've got to get the first part done. It's an administrative tool, the first filing. That's all it is. There's no work product other than to put this together. So let's get it done, and then we can talk about the impact of these others once you have some indication of what Wallace thinks should be done for a community like our size. But for the public's understanding, the most important thing that will come up out of it, which has already been touched on in Mr. Gruber's report this week, the most important thing that the state wants to see on the SSMP is that each community actually looks at their sewer system, does the visual inspection of manholes, make sure they're all tight and coordinated, do smoke tests to make sure that there isn't illegal connections. You know, when you smoke test the sanitary sewer and smoke starts coming out of somebody's gutter, what they've done is they've hooked up their gutter to their sanitary sewer, and that happens. That's a cross connection, and it's common in the United States everywhere. So the smoke test is important. Then if we find areas where we have high infiltration, where we know a pump is running in the middle, 2 o'clock in the morning continuously, that whole distribution system above that pump station, number one, may have to be videotaped. But these are things that take time and take manpower. And one of the issues that Jerry, I think he mentioned it, and I don't know if we do not have the people. You know, we've gone through an attrition and a cutback of staff. The people we have, and this is my professional judgment, the people, the number of people we have are necessary to run and to operate the system as we have it. If you start taking people and start looking at 1,400 manholes, and it's time and motion study. If you want to sit and do it, to go to each one, drive to 1,400, sit there, take off the cap, look in it, light it. I mean, you're going to lose hundreds and hundreds of man days. So what I suggest is it's good that your people are starting to look at maybe the most critical places like the canyons. But again, I had asked, I think you got to put together a little proposal so that we can find out from a competitive issues, maybe get a contractor to look at it and say, well, I can have 4 people work on this for the next 2 months and it's cost $15,000 to do. And whatever that number is, I'm just throwing it out. So it's important to be done on that regard because we don't want any spills. We shouldn't have any SSOs with sanitary sewer overflows as we did, which is all part of the SSMP program. But we do not want to take operating staff away from operating duties and general maintenance of existing operating to do this phase. It's got to be done. You can look at the at-risk. It's wonderful to do. But if we really want a program, and there has been some emails and comments in newspapers that we're not taking care of it, that's fine. But then I want it to be transparent to the community that this type of investigations to TV the entire sewer, to look at all the manholes, we're talking several hundred thousand dollars in effort without fixing anything. That's just to find the leaks. So, and it may have to be done, but it's everything has a balance and a cost to it. And you cannot take operating staff that we have and just say, okay, start checking out 80 miles of sewers and 1,400 manholes. Then we're going to have real operating problems, which are definite quality of life issues and also compliance issues. So everything here is I'll just endorse what's laid out here, but it is a program and it's got to be financially analyzed through essentially getting some bids on from what it's going to take to do this. And this is something that we should talk about, you know, later on as part of our goals.
Director McKinnon.
Yeah, I don't want to belabor this, but obviously, the Wallace plan was kind of dropped because if prior facilities manager is gone and so on and so forth. Is that a reasonable request? That and
60 days.
Agreed upon objective, right? 30 days for a draft, is that reasonable?
Yes.
Because, I mean, you have a very heavy workload, I know, at this point.
Don't give me
excuses. No, he has to agree. Otherwise, it won't happen. And that's what we're going to talk about in goals, right?
I think it's realistic.
I think as long as it's reasonable.
The draft
is important.
Yeah, the draft is done essentially, other than Tammy and I making some modifications to it. I think that's a realistic time frame. If it was not,
excellent.
I would share my concerns with you.
Excellent.
Okay, then we would expect to see that on
March. If not next month, it'll be March.
Okay. Is that acceptable?
If they get the draft,
he said 30-day draft, 60-day to the board.
Oh,
so
okay.
I got that down.
Okay.
They're going to have to finish up some of it.
So we anticipate bringing the draft of phase one of the SSMP in February for consideration and a dialogue and changes that may want to be made in February and then in March for final adoption. Is that how I understand
that
it?
That sounds fine.
Okay,
great. Agreement?
Any other questions that I can answer? Thank you very much for your time.
Okay, moving on to the 6B report. Oh, I'm sorry.
Well, let's wait before we move on to 6B. We have some requests to speak on 6A, and then we'll bring it back to the board in case the board has some questions on it. So on 6A, I have a request to speak from Elizabeth Bentenhauser. The next one is from Steve Figler, and then the third one is from Tina Dickerson. So.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'm Elizabeth Bettenhausen from here in Cambria, and I have already emailed my gratitude to Mr. Gruber. I am just thrilled to read such an expert, specific, detailed report on an event here in this district. I thank him immensely for his descriptive adequacy and for his analytical ability, as well as his awareness that fiscal responsibility doesn't mean pretending that there are $1 million in the bank when there aren't. When he described the balance between can and can't as being a financial issue, I assume that all of you directors were listening attentively to that. Certainly Mr. D'Amico indicated it. But when you come now later in this agenda to your discussion of goals, I hope that your motto is the balance between can and can't financially. I really commend the work that has been done down there at Chamwell Park already. I was down there the day the eruption happened, et cetera. This morning they were redoing, re-asphalting four major rectangles down there in the parking area at Chamwell Park. There were also 3,000 plus seagulls on the beach for reasons that I will not speculate about, except that their diet might have been significantly altered recently, and they might be just speculating about what the nourishment might be in Santa Rosa Creek these days. But I want, again, to commend the new utilities manager. I just find my smile when the bill comes huge, because I think to myself, my goodness, I'm paying for this guy's salary. And he is an expert and adept in this early experience. The conversation between Mr. D'Amico and Mr. Gruber must be absolutely fascinating, and I look forward to hearing snippets of it in the coming months. Thank you.
Thank you, Elizabeth. Steve Figler?
Yes, this is in regards to the treatment plant and the lines and the problems that we've had and might have. I think it would be wise for all of us to be aware of what the lifetime use of that plant is. Because when you build a facility like that, it's my understanding that you have a projection of its lifetime use. And I think we should be well aware of where we are along that line. And finally, I think we need to be thinking about what the cost of replacement is and potential upgrade to it, because it's probably a very old plant. And I would like us, all of us, you and we citizens, to become aware of what that is.
Thank you, Steve. Tina Dickerson? Dickerson, excuse me. Didn't want to put the E on.
Well, President Clift, you should know by now, I would think, how to pronounce my name.
I had to apologize last month
for okay.
Passing names, and now
right.
I have to apologize next month.
Well, Tina Dickerson, Cambria again. And I, too, echo Ms. Bettenhausen's comments regarding the new utilities manager's report. And I would hope that much of what he has outlined is going to actually happen in this town. And while I appreciate Mr. D'Amico's learned comments, I take issue with postponing these things. It's about time that we had a huge presentation about a year and a half ago, on the screen about how things were corroding. There were so many problems. I think it was right before a rate increase, actually. And it was a lot of fear-mongering, but it wasn't really fear-mongering. These were real concerns. And yet, we haven't come to that point until we have this sewage spill and all this water. And, oh, here we are again talking about the problems with our infrastructure. Now, in Mr. Gruber's report, he says on page 15, third paragraph, under ideal circumstances, I'm quoting, sanitary sewer systems that are relatively new and leak-free can handle relatively short periods of heavy rains. Unfortunately, the CCSD system is nearing the end of its useful life and is experiencing many of the infrastructure challenges that face numerous communities throughout California and the United States. Aha! I was aware that our water treatment plant might be needing some updating or whatever, but now also our sewer system. So You know, really, gentlemen and staff, please get on the right foot for this town. We are the ratepayers, and we need to see what you're doing with our monies that are funding what came to be in 1976 a water and sewer utilities services district. I am so tired of you trying to be big and wonderful for everything else but the very reason that you came to exist. These are critical issues, and they need to be addressed. And I'll tell you something. If you guys can't do it, we'll get a bunch of women in 2 years that can. Thank you.
Tina?
Yes.
I'm sorry. I just need to... So that to be chastised, I'd like to know why.
Well,
what did you say I wanted to delay something?
Well, you were saying that Mr. Gruber was wanting to look at all the manholes, go through them, check
right.
them out.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't we want to do
no,
that?
No, I didn't say not to. You didn't. Maybe you after once you heard that, you might.
You said it's going to cost.
I said what we need to do is come up with a plan, and then he can't do it with the existing staff. I said.
Or the monies, I thought I...
Well, no, but I said, if you can do what he's doing, which is kind of every Thursday, let's say if he's...
Wouldn't that be a prerequisite?
Yes, but two people on Thursdays is never going to get through 1,400 manholes. So I asked him, I suggested to him that he put together a timeline of what it would take to do it and to find out from a contractor or someone that could put the staff together. Just like Elizabeth pointed out how nice, I don't know what the name of the contractor is, if they're doing a great job, that's fine. He may be somebody to say, by the way, we want to look at, first, do the first 500 to see at the lowest level, because those are the ones that get the most overflow, and get a price on it. Because, you know, as you point out, things cost money. Now, and I want to bring that amount of money to the public's view, it'll come to the board. If the board decides that we need to do it, I think the community should know, hey, look at that. They're spending $50,000, $100,000. Then people say, well, why did you spend that money? If you want transparency, we have to have data to give you. But we're not going to make blanket decisions, go check 1,400 manholes, and then find out nobody's at the plant for the next
okay.
6 months.
True.
So do
but,
the work.
But I'm going to say this, yeah. that it has been a pattern that I have been at least observing,
yeah.
that the CCSD, in times of trauma and crisis, they're always acting on a react. They have to react
right.
to an action instead of getting the thing fixed,
well, no,
which
no.
is what we
You're
need
right.
to do.
My point is we're not going to react like drop everything else and look at these
patch it up.
Shoes. Patch it up, right. So let's come out with an idea and a complete and he's very competent to do that. You pointed
Correct.
That out. He's very methodical.
And
Let
you
him
are
methodically
too.
Go to the next level. Tell us, come back whenever it is ready, when he's ready, say, look, to do this the right way, it's going to take this many man hours, and it's a contractor who gets, I sign vouchers every month for our contractors. Their laborers get $45 an hour, their operators $55 an hour. So many man days are going to be needed, it's going to be so many thousands of dollars. Then the community will know what we're talking about, and we can make those decisions if everyone
True.
Thinks it's
true. And people are looking for work in this economy,
right.
and you may be able to find people that are willing to work for $30 an hour.
Well,
so, you know, it takes a little bit of this. It really does. And
right.
we have to start
thinking
that we can accomplish okay. these things, Mr. D'Amico. Thank you.
Thank you, Tina. I don't want to just get into a... One way battle here to the extent we can. Lynn Harkins, and I did have yours, Lynn. It was just kind of a general, and I wasn't sure it was
right.
on 6A or not. So thank
no,
you.
No, it was just need to be clarified.
Yeah.
Okay, my first time before the board, since you have new members, and I want to welcome you. So this is the honeymoon phase of my comment. If I could, this is slowgreenbuild.org. Oops. And I had the great good fortune to go to an exquisite presentation they did on the 14th introducing this wonderful Homeowner's Guide to Rainwater Management and Low Impact Development, which is low impact development is a dreadful way of saying storm water management and getting this water to infiltrate into our watershed. We have had demonstrated so vividly in this past storm that we don't have a water shortage in this community. We have a shortage of water storage in this community. It is ludicrous that we are going like with a tin cup in our hands looking for funding for water for this community when it comes down in great abundance. So this is what homeowners can do for if we eliminate homeowner landscape watering by having cisterns and by creating rain gardens. According to your build-out proposal, build-out reduction thing, you say that 50 to 75% of homeowner water is used for landscaping. That's how you justify buying all those vacant lots for paper, saving money on paper. So this is available. These people are so cool, they've made it available to download free. A donation is requested for the hard copies. SlowGreenBuild.org. You can download your own copy. Now, Mr. D'Amico, bless your heart, you launched your political career in 2008 by bagging on the existing board about they didn't even know what a sanitary sewer management plan was when you brought it up. And you used that to launch yourself as a public figure. And last April, and I have the DVD to back this up, I brought up problems with this sewer, my personal experience, and from that, my conversations with staff about that pretty much. I, for one, in this community, will not quibble with any money you exact from me to pay to remedy this appalling instance, which you had plenty of advance notice about, and that sanitary sewer management plan was due at the end of 2008. And you've been in office, Director D'Amico, too long to step aside here and get a diplomatic kind of a pass on this. I don't understand why you weren't on this. If it was a simple matter of a thumbnail sketch of what needed to be done and we've paid $5,000, I find it inexcusable that it's not done. So that's, you're an insurance man, Director Clift. Would you write a policy to insure against the loss of income that would accrue in this community in property values and tourism economy if Cambria could be lifted up and rematerialized out on Highway 41 someplace? Is it not the very presence of state parks and the jewel of the coastline on which we are located that is responsible for this being the community that we all love to live in? And I would love to take responsibility for making sure that nothing like that ever happens again. It's one thing for you to flim-flam and refuse to do a full environmental review to find out what the implications are for your proposed drilling out there. But this was an unpardonable desecration of the public's land. And I applaud state parks for their stewardship. And this is for public consumption, to quote you, President Clift. I'd be interested, nod of a head, would you write that policy to insure against the loss of income, the loss of value that would happen if we didn't have state parks? I don't think so. And if you say yes, I will take my custom with State Farm elsewhere if they're producing somebody who would write a policy for that. Thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate your time. Welcome, new directors.
All right. That's all the ones I have on 6A. We're going to come back to the board. Was there any questions relative to 6A thank Director Thompson?
Yes, thank you, President Cliff, members. Just a couple points under the Parks and Recreation component. First, I just wanted to reiterate what Tammy said about the PROS Commission. I think those who are familiar with the commission know of the really wonderful things that have happened over the past 10 years with respect to the Fiscalini Ranch, the management of that, the Bluff Trail, the Marine Terrace Trail, the completion of the Guthrie Bianchini House, the tennis courts at the school. And these are things that the PROS Commission worked on with CCSD staff, and I think that I would hope that we would get a flood of applications from all the qualified people in this community for that position. Having said that, there were a couple other items that I had a question on. that took place since the last meeting. One had to do with the vandalism on the ranch. Is there perhaps an update on that? And then also the issue about the barbecue pit. Is there any new information on that?
I don't have updates on the barbecue pit right now, and I know staff is working with users and others to try to come up with a cost-effective solution or maybe even a low-to-no-cost selective or fix until the next budget year. As far as if you're talking about the vandalism with regard to the bike jumps,
yes,
that are the article that's in the paper today, we've been working closely with the representatives of the Friends of the Fiscalini Ranch Preserve in order to obviously bring the property back to its natural condition, but at the same time find ways to be able to monitor more closely because it got by all of us, including the Friends. So we're not aware of anybody who is going to obviously fess up and say that they did it. If it was, it might have just been some young teens who put it together, maybe just a small group. There's not an organized group of bike riders who have approached us to try to find some reasonable solution with regard to creating something like that on a more permanent basis. So right now we're just we had to wait for the rains to end. We had to wait for the land to dry out. And we've been out there now with the Friends to try to get the property restored.
Great. Thank you.
And I'll make note of the barbecue pit, and we'll have that included next month as to what is going to be happening with that.
Okay. Any other questions on the manager's report? If not, then let's move on to 6B.
Okay, so 6B starts out with the responses that the board directed staff to bring back to the questions imposed by Valerie Bentz. So those are covering pages 23 and 24 and 25. And then I'm going to turn over the rest of this for a presentation by Bob Gressens, our district engineer, for the update on the desalination project and the Stewart Street and Rodeo Grounds pump station project. And I just want to inform you that in the future, when we get these quarterly reports that the project manager says she's now got calendared and we will get them, it will be attached to the back of this 6B report.
Okay. Federal authorizations. Again, those have really not changed much in the last 6 months or so. The 10.3 is the original authorization through the WERDA Act. And the main change is we now have the approved $3 million in-kind credit. And that $3 million in-kind credit took an amendment, actually took an act of Congress. And the letter that Mr. Hellman mentioned earlier to Greg Boghossian, Army Corps project manager at the time, was to help justify our getting that $3 million credit. There was actually between, and this is well before most of my time with the district, but when the original project was designed, starting around 1994, and then it continued up through 2000, there was probably at least $4.1 million spent on the project at that point in time over those years. We were able to effectively argue our case to get $3 million credit back from that old expenditure by using the old reports and parts of the old design and applying it to the current project. So that was part of that effort to recoup some of that lost investment in the past and be able to apply that $3 million towards the cost-sharing formula of WERDA, which is 75% federal, 25% local. So that $3 million is being applied to that 25% local share amount. The other item under federal authorizations is the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act of 2009, or ARRA. We received a little over $3 million in ARRA appropriations. Now, that gets applied against the $10.3 million, so it's not additional authorization, but at least it was appropriated to our project at the time. Under project funds, again, it's more of a rehash of what's been appropriated versus what's been allocated, including $166,000 that was approved by the CCSD board a while back, I want to say a year and a half or more ago now. So the total allocated funds to the project as it stands right now is about a little over $4 million. The next page, Carlos, please. Okay, this gives the details on what has been obligated and expended and what they estimate for the next quarter in the three vertical columns to the right-hand side. So they have it broken down by Army Corps labor, which is the first category. You can see what's been obligated and what's been expended to date that pretty much match their two columns and what they estimate for the next coming quarter. This started off back around March of 2006. So when you see project management, that's going all the way back to that time frame and coming current to effective January 13th of this year. And that includes all the discussions on the PCA amendment, some legal time in reviewing these documents and so forth. Under the contracts portion, they have the geotechnical investigation. That is mostly Diaz-Yorman's cost in developing the investigation and working with the environmental consultant for the investigation proposed at the Santa Rosa Creek Beach area and some of the work out there. They have a contract modification that they really haven't gotten into yet with Diaz-Yorman, depending on what they discover. There's a preliminary design contract that's a little under $1.3 million. That's the work by CDM. And that's to take the design up to around a 30% level and stop at that point. They're going to go to roughly a 10% in working with the Chambers Group in developing various alternatives that will go into the EIR, EIS, pause at that point, see what's going to be the recommended alternative through that environmental clearance process, and take it up to a 30% point. There'll be another decision, major decision, at how to proceed at that point with detailed design, or if you want to go to a design build or some other form of contracting at that point in time. The environmental impact statement line item, that's the work by the Chambers Group. That's a $544,000 cost item, roughly. What they're calling their environmental documents categorical exclusion, that's been the work in getting the geotechnical environmental clearance to date. Under the CCSD, you can see they're matching funds with approximately $260,000 estimated for CCSD staff time to date, as well as $948,000 coming from the in-kind credit, which is that part of that $3 million credit. So the subtotal local cost to date on the current projects is around $1.2 million. So that is pretty much the gist of this financial report. I went pretty quickly. I'd be glad to go back and answer any questions you may have as far as where the numbers came from and the formulation and so forth. If there aren't any questions, I can continue with my PowerPoint and go through some slides that before we can get very specific on the schedule. And that's our major issue right now, is how do we investigate that main paleo channel off of the Santa Rosa Creek Beach. I mean, that's probably our key project issue at the moment that we're working through.
Okay.
Any other questions? If not, go ahead.
Okay. As I go forward here, I'll talk a little bit more about the trip I took last week. Last week I was down there in the Corps headquarters in Los Angeles on Thursday, and again going through preliminary alternatives that are being kicked around and brainstormed for the project level EIR, EIS, and there'll be several alternatives outlined in that report, and it'll go through a full public review process. After that meeting, we spent the next day touring three different facilities, concentrating mainly on how they get the seawater, you know, out of the ocean and to the facility. And we saw three distinctly different approaches by some major agencies there. And if you go to the next slide, Carlos, I'll start off with the Municipal Water District of Orange County, or MODOC, as they refer to it as an acronym. I think my staff report said San Diego. That was wrong. It's actually Dana Point, which is north of San Diego, for this first stop. And here we had a view of an illustration of their slant well. They used a slant well construction technique on a state beach, Doheny State Beach, and they go offshore about, 350 feet or so with this slant well design. And they have screens that are underneath the ocean floor. It's drawn in a combination right now of ocean water as well as some water that's mixing at that point underneath the ocean floor. So it's not 100% seawater. It's more like a mix of brackish-type water at the moment. They're pumping it continuously, and their salinity is gradually increasing over time. They also have a pilot facility. So next slide, please. This is just a view of the beach area. They have where these people are standing, going offshore about 350 feet from that point is where that slant well goes. So you can't see anything on the beach when you stand there. It's all underground. The slide in the lower left is some of the state parks, trucks in the background, and a building they have, as well as a sign that talks about the sensitivity of the steelhead. They're in the Doheny State Beach Lagoon and Creek area there. So they have some of the same issues that we wrestle with, is how do you avoid impacts to migrating steelhead and so forth. Next slide, please. This is a picture of their pilot plant, which is just in a cargo container off their parking lot. The lower left is the outside view of it, not much to see. Inside, it's crammed with different equipment, including RO elements and so forth. right now, they're running it to test the corrosion of various materials as well as the biological formation on different materials. They're not running the RO portion of it yet, and they'll probably start that up within the next couple of months and start testing the actual removal salts with the RO elements that are inside this particular facility. Next slide, please. This was the next stop that we made. It was in Redondo Beach. It's the West Basin Municipal Water District. And this was just an outstanding tour that we got there. This is Phil Lorry, who's a senior engineer with West Basin. He was conducting a tour for us. They have a totally different approach for seawater intake. They're using what you'd call an open intake. And they have a screen that's on the ocean floor, essentially, with very narrow openings. They're testing three different styles of intake filtering. One is, I think, a 1 millimeter separation. One's 2 millimeters. Another one's going to be like a sand filter type system. Here in the upper left, Phil is pointing out their fine screen device. It's like on a riser coming off the floor of the ocean, and then it goes out horizontally in two directions, and very fine screens on it. The lower right portion, they haven't quite started this yet, but they're going to do biological assessments of what their return water might have in it to judge if there's any impacts on marine species. Next slide, please. They have a pilot facility next to what we were just looking at, and it's about 500,000 gallons per day, so about 500,000 gallons per day sizing. They have pre-treatment. They have RO elements inside here. As part of the tour, you get to taste their water, their RO seawater. So this is our CDM project manager, Sava Nedic, who is enjoying a nice cup of RO'd water, and I can vouch for you, it tasted very nice. So it was a very professional, just excellent presentation. Next slide, please. Camera shot of the facility with the fish actually swimming around it, and that's that upper left corner. You can see they keep the velocities fairly low so they're not impinging on the screen. So you can sit there and watch their TV screen and see the fish just swimming around the intake part of it. They're also doing quite a bit of extensive study on minute marine species like the larvae, for example, that just float around in the ocean. That's a major concern. In the lower right corner, the woman facing Phil Lorry is on her project team with the Chambers Group, Noelle Davies, and she has a PhD in marine biology. So she was very tuned into what he was saying, particularly about potential marine impacts. Next slide, please. The next stop we had was at Long Beach. This is the Long Beach Water District that has a subterranean engineered infiltration gallery, and this is another approach. It has some substantial construction impacts because what they do is drive sheet piling right at the water's edge, and they excavate down about 25, 30 feet, put filter under drains underneath the seafloor at that point. They have a cofferdam arrangement around it so the seawater doesn't get in while they're constructing it, and they put in engineered filtering material all the way up, and then at the upper portion they replace the beach sand so it looks the same as when they started when they're done. While I was out there in the upper left corner is a woman walking along the beach, right on top of the infiltration gallery, people playing frisbee and doing the normal beach-type activities. That's an artist's rendition of the infiltration gallery. They're also going to have an exfiltration gallery for any concentrate return, but all we saw at this point was the infiltration gallery. Next slide. Here's another shot of the beach in the upper left corner where there's a group of people. We're looking at their, there's a sump that they have a pump that pumps the filtered water to a pilot facility. So all you have is a round concrete structure, maybe the upper foot and a half is visible, and that's it. And that could be buried if necessary. This was kind of an engineering drawing in lower right that shows the cross-section of the beach to have the under drains drain into a sump where there's a pump that pumps the water. Next slide. And that's pretty much it. Three totally different approaches to seawater desalination. Each agency, we're sharing our notes as best we can as far as the issues that we're wrestling through. And our consulting team is definitely taking good notes and seeing how some of these ideas can be applied to the different alternatives that they're coming up with. So I'd be glad to answer any further questions at this point.
Any questions?
Okay.
I do. I was wondering, are these licensed and ready to go if they put the technology in, or are they facing barriers from other things?
They have permits for the pilot facilities. They don't have their permanent facilities completed yet, so they would still have to go through the licensing process on a permanent facility. Okay.
Director McKenna?
What is a pod?
I'm sorry.
What is a pod?
What pod?
You said pod. But you the acronym that you're using so often. What is that?
Well, I'm sorry. I'm not hearing.
What is a pod? You referenced pod.
P-O-D.
Yeah.
P-O-D.
Then maybe we misunderstood.
Maybe I'm.
You
maybe
said they didn't have a license yet for the
what? Pilot.
It's a pilot plant facility.
And this is part of the process that they would use in getting a full EIR of the facility. And these are all active projects with the intent of a full desalinization plant at some point.
They pilot it for design purposes more so than the EIR EIS, but they are collecting data that will go into the EIR EIS as part of their process.
Okay.
And that will be permitted in the future for a full-size facility.
I asked this question last time. Did you happen to look at Santa Cruz where they had gone through their pilot operation?
I spoke with certain team members that are involved with Santa Cruz.
At that group.
And I've talked with them in the past. They do not have their EIR, EIS
right.
done for their full-size facility right. yet. They went through an environmental clearance for their pilot plant.
Mm-hmm.
And that was part of a marine laboratory that had an existing intake.
Mm-hmm.
So they had much of the infrastructure for their pilot facility already in place, and that's mm-hmm. what they ran from.
Okay.
But they still have ways to go for their EIR, EIS.
And you mentioned that like 500,000 gallons per day was one of the second one that you
yes,
did?
Yes, the West Basin Water District was about 500,000 gallons per day.
And in our case, we're doing like we would potentially.
See, was that again?
That was the Municipal Water District of Orange County.
Right, okay. So Orange County worked with obviously anyone who has oversight both environmentally and legally over that beach area.
Yes.
They came to understandings. Something was constructed, probably like a directional drill, if you will, and that was done. Now you went for the intake one was an old intake, so there was nothing, quote, new done. But then you talk about the vertical screen, the wedge wire screen, which is that torpedo-type thing that was out there. Is that something that was constructed?
Yes.
Okay. And it was constructed from a beach, and it has a pumping station at the beachhead or at the edge of the sand area. Is that what the picture showed?
Okay. The let me just make sure I'm being clear. The Redondo Beach or the West Basin Municipal Water District facility that had the underwater camera.
Right.
There were pipes pulled through an existing 10-foot
right.
diameter
Right. Let's ignore
pipeline.
That one because there's no analogy
floor.
For us. But go to the one that had You explained about the cofferdam that was built on the beach.
Yes, that's Long Beach.
They put in material and then put some sand back, and everybody, it's an active beach being used, and that's the one I think that did have the vertical sump with the pump in it.
Yes, that's
right? Okay. And that was constructed at the edge of a beach, whether it's on the sand or in the grass area, but all within another area, obviously anywhere along the beach areas of coastal California, probably had some coastal commission issues, probably had some county issues, parks issues, and that was satisfactorily done, obviously, to everybody's satisfaction because it was constructed.
Yes.
So my point I'm trying to bring, I think, to the community is we are not a group of people trying to figure out what to do to damage a beach and not understand the realities of what needs to be done to a beach. We're not the first ones to do it. People are putting intakes of different natures and different design and working on beach areas, excavating beach areas, restoring beach areas to back to what would be considered used and useful for the people, for the public, and for the animals too, and that has been an issue from day one. I think the biggest pushback for getting the issue of spending the money to build a desal is the environmental impact that we seem to be being branded with because we're going onto a beach. This is done up and down in the state of California. You know, if it was the state of Texas, people say, "Well, we know about those people," but this is California with loads of regulatory oversight. Multiple agencies in every state, from the state, from the county levels, from municipality levels, and all of these things have been done in the recent past. Do you know when the cofferdam one was put in, that infiltration?
I don't have exact dates. I could look that up. I want to say within the last couple of years.
Okay. So, I mean, we're not talking something that was done mm-hmm. before EPA was alive, before the Coastal Commission was engaged. So what we have here is, again, there is precedent. There is experience that's been done. Things have been done according to rules and regulations, which have to be followed. No one is asking things to be shortcutted in that regard. But they've been done. Now, the two, what I'll call real intakes comparable to ours, at least involved with beach impact, do you know what agency, who did the work on both of them?
Okay,
the design teams and the like.
Well, some of the same design team members are part of our team. For example, the slant well down at Modoc on Doheny State Beach, Dennis Williams with Geoscience is subcontracted to CDM.
Okay.
So he was a lead geologist for that slant well.
Right.
So he's directly involved with that. I believe the Chambers Group did some of the biological monitoring
right.
during the construction of the okay. Slant well. So they're part of the same team that we have right now through Army Corps. So they're very experienced in some of those other areas.
Right. So, again, to look at the impact, what we're looking at as board members, in my own realization of what's happening, it seems that at this point we have the Corps managing. They're our construction design construction manager, if you will. They don't physically design, but they have retained experts and qualified people who now you can see, I think the community can see, have done this before. Besides the issue of not doing anything totally unprecedented at the beach level, we also have people who have well experienced and have gone through similar type of beach intakes of different nature. And
correct.
I think that's answer, you know, at least for me, answers some of the questions, and which rightly raised. You know, is it the Corps who's doing this? Why isn't CCSD involved? Well, we are involved. You're doing due diligence on projects.
Concept which had three tanks on that site, the two existing and the one new one, and another alternative now that will have only one existing tank and then a bigger second tank, and that will allow a little more room for constructing the tank. So it has different advantages in that regard. So they're wrestling their way through that. At the moment, we were talking about a May-June time frame, the last I spoke with their project manager, as far as getting through the public review process and having a hearing here over the adoption of those initial study mitigated NIG decks and authorizing the projects to proceed at that point. The rodeo grounds pump station, a little more, there's a little less commenting on that, just some additional pipelines to try to allow us to activate a pipeline that was stubbed in underneath Main Street. Years ago when the Main Street Enhancement Project was put in, we took the results of the hydraulic model and saw we needed a 12-inch line that goes from that pump station over to the Pine Knolls neighborhood that was put in and capped. So there's different segments of pipe missing to activate that, so we're working that into the rodeo grounds pump station project to cover it all with the same environmental clearance document. And that's been the focus of what RBF is in the middle of right now. So, are there any questions on,
yeah,
on
any
those
questions
particular
on,
projects?
On those
okay.
All right, I'm sorry, but you know these are important projects to move forward. And I, as Director McKinnon, Vice President McKinnon mentioned before, and we're going to have a goals program, and I would really love bullet points, please, on some of these things because it's hard to find anything in here. I see a date of April on the second line of the last paragraph. I see a date of, and then nothing after. We talk about 3 months and 6 months. So when will we have a public seeker hearing?
A public CEQA hearing?
I'm reading your your write-up. What date are we doing that?
It'll be either your May or June board meeting. Right now they're estimating the June board meeting. I'm trying to push them up to the May meeting if at all possible.
Goal then is no later than June.
Yes.
Okay. No. Do you understand that?
Absolutely.
And you can agree with that?
Yes.
Okay.
I'd like to make it May, but I...
No, I understand, and I'd like to see it earlier, too. But,
all right.
You know, I was properly chastised by one of the speakers, is that we knew about the SSMP. It should have been done. It's not a $5,000 report could have been done. Actually, it's probably 3 days' work of a $200 engineer or whatever, and it's rightly so. We've got to start putting dates on things, and if we don't want to, I mean, if we take a different decision later, that's fine. But we got to get to decision-making points, and we're not going to get it until we get the seeker in. And then, so if we do the June, and let's assume it all works out, then we're talking July, August, September to complete the design and permitting, so that we might be breaking ground in April of 2012. That's why my point is, right. Make a table, put three things, seeker, permitting, seeker, design, permitting, breaking ground. And we for the next meeting, please.
Well, I can certainly do that. The only concern I have at this point is the funding.
Look, you are an engineer yeah. who's supposed to get these projects ready up through bidding process using consultants. Your responsibility. We can't make a decision, and our community can't make a decision on funding until we know when we're going. There's no sense in talking about funding if the job's not going to be ready for another year. Well, maybe we should be. My point is I'd like to start talking about that.
My reason for mentioning that is just as background project history. The reason these reports were not completed is because the funding was stopped, and so the projects were put on hold.
Okay.
So we have that history on this project.
Right.
Okay.
But the history is not there right now.
Right. They're restarted now.
Right.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Are we all in agreement that we would like to have this project on our May agenda for a CEQA hearing and would reluctantly consider having it on June? And be disappointed with the contractor at that point? Is that a consensus?
Yeah, I definitely think so.
At least you can convey that to our contractor.
They're on record as telling me June. So let's leave it at June. If we can do better, we'll do better. But it's kind of I think that's
here,
a safer approach right
June.
Now.
Maybe in contracts in the future we have expected dates and penalties for failure to.
It's hard with that, but yeah. No, I think that's an issue that we'll have to do on anything going forward. When there's any contract signed by anybody, we have to have we use in the industry a milestone date.
Okay. Yeah.
And you can argue about what happens after the milestone. Consultants, essentially, what you do is you just fire them.
Coming faces, and I'd like to say that of the five directors. you're basically starting with a clean slate. I don't hold any of you responsible for all the past misdeeds of the directors that are now no longer sitting where you are. You didn't select DeSalle as a water choice. You didn't hire the general manager. That seems to be getting more and more complaints. You're not responsible for all the pension and health plan benefits. So changes can come from you because you didn't make those choices. I hope that there will be changes. As far as some of the things that have been said, well, firstly, I didn't come up and speak on the utilities manager report because I didn't realize it was bifurcated. So I would like to welcome the new utilities manager. And I appreciate this very transparent, two-page long entry in the staff report as opposed to the two-paragraph DeSalle report. This is very, very nice. I'd like to ask a question about transparency on DeSalle. Have all of you directors seen this contract for the Chambers Group on the design of the EIR for the DeSalle facility? Do you all have this contract?
I doubt it.
Do you doubt it? So you don't? None of you? None of you have seen this. But I have it. And isn't that interesting? And does the engineer, do you have it? You must have it.
I have a scope of work, but not the signed agreement.
No, but do you have the contract unsigned?
I have the scope of work, but not the contract signed.
Okay. Is this a scope of work? What I'm getting at is, why does a member of the public have this? This is something that we as the CSSD are paying a in-kind share of this cost. This is over $500,000. This outlines what this CCSD is doing now on DeSalle. And you don't have it, but I do. That's egregious. You should have this contract. The general manager should be turning over to you all parts of the work product. And you're not getting it, so you can't know what's going on. But I do. Anyway, I'd like to just say in parting that I am trying to be nicer. I'm working on it. It's a New Year's resolution. And I'm trying to help you guys out. So if you want the contract, just contact me and I'll get it to you. Now, I know about the Dana Point project. I've been there. I've been talking to the key people for 5 years. That's R&D money. It's called the R&D gravy train. That's, I think it was Prop 50 or one of the big bonds. All of the projects that the engineer has mentioned are just gravy train. They're never going to be DeSalle plants. They got the money. They built the pilot plants. But there's no DeSalle facility actually being planned. Nobody's bought into it yet. So he failed to say that. As far as our beach, the reason why the Coastal Commission, the state parks, that's an enhanced special beach. This area hasn't been ruined yet. That's why it's not going to be permitted. And when the general manager said that the money is on the chopping block, what does that mean? Does that mean that the money's drying up? So what is the fallback plan? Now, would you like to appoint a committee? And I'd like to be on it to investigate Whale Rock. Not everyone my good friends, not everyone agrees with me that it's such a good idea. But it is, actually. I've talked to some of the key people there. It's something that you might want to keep in the back of your money, because if the money's on the chopping block, what's our fallback plan? Something to think about. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Elizabeth Bettenhausen.
Thank you very much, Mr. President. Elizabeth Bettenhausen from Cambria, a full-time resident. I want to, again, as I did last month, to give you copies of my presentation here quickly in 3 minutes because, I'll give it to you first.
Give it to the clerk.
if you please pass them on to the directors and others who need them, I'd be happy.
I don't want you taking your time.
Okay. Thank you, sir.
Doing delivery work.
Thank you. Yesterday, I received from Ms. Rudock a copy of the memo that's on here, in which Mr. Gressens answered the questions I posed at your last meeting in, 5 weeks ago. In my response below, I've given a short form of the, in purple of my questions from December. The black is Mr. Gressen's comments, and then I have put my responses in red. The very first question had to do with the quarterly report, and I want to come back after these comments and say one thing quickly about that. And is how does the Chambers Group report to the project coordination team during the execution of their contract? We have a team that's coordinating the project. How do they hear from who's doing the project? Which seems to me a rather basic way of getting things done. The next question. How will the final program level EIR for the CCSD Water Master Plan be used by the Chambers Group for the project EIS-EIR? And Mr. Gressens answered, the CCSD's Water Master, et cetera, is currently being used as a reference by the Chambers Group. What that means, I don't know. The Chambers Group and Army Corps have yet to decide on how this will be incorporated into a project-level EIR-EIS, end of quotation. My question is, does this mean that the only design specifications officially adopted by the board of the CCSD might not be considered in the EIR-EIS prepared by the Chambers Group? And if that's the case, we need some basic policy discussion here in this district. The next question there, will some of the $3 million credit be used to pay CCSD's share of the contract with the Chambers Group? And Mr. Gressens answers yes. And I will come back to this at the very end, looking at the quarterly report. And finally, the fourth question then. I asked about the contract with CDM. This sort of, you know, internet has made your lives much more complicated because we can sit and just go and find data that you probably don't have time to find out or nobody else in the staff. But the CDM contract, I asked about that last time and you didn't know anything about it and it wasn't here and ACE couldn't forward it to me and they still haven't actually. However, I want to point something out to you in the last page of my comments. The notice awarding the CDM contract is given at, and there's the website. I love this website because it's a federal government website, and it's called www.recovery.gov/transparency. Isn't that? I love it. Anyway, does CCSD know the contents of this contract, the amount of money involved, and the specifications of the design requested by CCSD? Does the financial quarterly report of ACE give more details about this contracted work? We'll come back to that. The answer is no. By what criteria, and here are my final four comments before I go just quickly to that quarterly report, which we just got today. By what criteria will you, CCSD directors, make decisions about the wisdom of our payment for this work to CDM? And it will be approximately, if the 25% stays, $321,730 from CCSD. How can decisions be made before the work is completed? So the question is, by what criteria will you make those decisions that we should pay that money? And so I emphasize today two major concerns. What are the actual criteria being used to prepare a preliminary design for the proposed desalination plant here in Cambria? This you've heard me ask at least 4,000 times. What official actions by the Board of Directors of CCSD play a role in this process? How, and that's the first concern. The other is, how is the Board of Directors of CCSD keeping track of all financial aspects of the proposed desalination plant? And how are you regularly informing the public thereof? So I request that this document of questions and answers be included in the official record of this meeting. Thank you. And I want to ask then, I know my 3 minutes is up.
Elizabeth, thank you for your comments.
I want to ask one question. I'd only got this today, sir, and I could not incorporate.
I've been very liberal with you, Elizabeth. You know,
Mr. Sanders?
We can take these things.
Yes,
under consideration. But
I understand that, sir, and I'd appreciate it if when you take these under consideration, I would get an answer before the evening, before your next meeting. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'll put this in a letter to the editor.
Nick. Steve Figler.
The presentation by Mr. Gressens talked a lot about the inflow system, but I heard nothing about the outflow, about the highly salinated and chemical-laden water that goes out. To me, that's sort of like starting a nuclear plant and not worrying about the spent rods. Well, you may think that's hyperbole, but it's probably not hyperbole to the fish in the algae, et cetera. And just one other quick...
Speaker Tina Dickerson.
Thank you, Director Clift. I guess I'm making up for a lot of missed meetings with all these questions, but this is an important issue. First of all, Mr. Gressens, in your presentation, while I appreciate it, I'm really confused, and as many of us are and have been, as to really, you know, we've talked about who's the lead agency. So the Army Corps is the lead agency, and yet I have to ask you, when you went down to Southern California to these three cities, was there an Army Corps representative alongside you looking at these different plants that were being considered there and have been constructed thus far? I'd like to know if there was an Army Corps rep with Mr. Gressens.
Was there an Army Corps rep?
Like me to respond?
Obviously, from the people that were there, there were the consultants that the Army Corps has.
Yes, there were definitely Army Corps staff there.
Yes.
Okay, and then... You know, we kind of gloss over these things, so you learn some things. I don't think that the information you provided was very detailed. I also have to look at the populations of Redondo Beach, of Long Beach, and of Doheny Beach area, those areas. I mean, why don't we get... I mean, we need to really look at things that are very important. We are a community of, what, 6,500? And I would like to know what the populations of those particular cities are that are looking into desal. We just can't keep glossing over this for the public. You've got to come up with real facts. The public comes up here with amazing facts, with amazing information, because they do their research. And it just astounds me at how much more knowledge there seems to be out on this side of the dais than there is on this side. Or is the information being suppressed from us? And that's what I brought up earlier, transparency, and I really mean it. If we don't start seeing the truth about these projects, and in this case, this particular huge project, which seems to be extremely secretive to the public, you guys really mean this. That I think in the next election, you're going to find that people are going to be extremely upset, and there will be consequences. Consequences by what we feel. And when you look at those two numbers, 53 to 47 from the last election, this community is changing its views, and it's changing its views or view on desal. So start looking as... Mahala Burton mentioned, start looking at alternatives, because this doesn't look good. We're on the chopping block. I've been looking at those reports from Vanskylica all along, and thank goodness at least we're now getting reports, but they don't look good. And if I were sitting where you guys are sitting, I'd definitely be looking at some alternatives. I think that's the prudent and the right thing to do. Thank you.
Thank you. Next speaker is Toby Crockett.
Hi, gentlemen, ladies. Thank you so much for clearly working hard to create change and some shift here. This is inevitably the rocky beginning, but things will happen. because there's a goodwill to do so. I did want to respond directly to a few comments from Director D'Amico about the report that Engineer Gressens presented regarding the comparison of a beach to our beach. You know, again, I'm a professor, so I tend to get stuck on logical matters of logic. So, of course, we know that a beach is not the same as our beach. Our specific beach is quite different from Redondo Beach and Long Beach. So for some obvious reasons and some perhaps less obvious reasons. And also I want to say that I'm sure none of, you know, you want to be very careful about relying on the rhetorical argument that just because a precedent has been set, that's necessarily a good thing. We can think of precedents for many poor choices. So, I mean, I appreciate very much what you're saying. Yes, things can be done. Look, things actually in place in a locale. Wow. I'm sure we all appreciate that. But there are probably some really big issues of difference between our beach and those beaches, plus those are, as many have already said, pilot programs that aren't actually going to do real result-oriented things, and we have result-oriented problems about how to get through the kinds of dialogue, hostility, tension, everything that's going on here. I know that we can do better than this, and so I look forward to our ongoing conversation. Thank you so much for your time and hard work.
Thank you, Tony. I have no other requests to speak, so we will move on then to, I can come back to the board if anyone has anything on it. If not, we'll move on to item 6C, which is member and committee reports. And we do have a report from the WEAC committee, and I know you fellows have been sitting there, and I think it's best we let the public do that first. So I don't. there it is, up there. I remember. You had gave us a new one, huh?
Yeah. Are you ready?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, Irwin, go ahead and start.
Mr. President, members of the board, Irwin Oneshin, that was appointed to your WEAC committee to look at the what would happen in the community if there was a water emergency. We've had about 15 meetings, had a very good committee. There was a good cross-section, I feel, of the people in the community that helped develop this. Next slide, please. The committee has basically stayed the same with the addition. I did appoint Peter Caldicott to the committee. I felt that he had a lot of experience and knowledge in the area, so that was one change that I made just recently. Next slide, please. Committee has held 15 meetings, like I mentioned. A progress report was presented to your board in October the 1st of 2009. Emergency plan to respond to catastrophic system failure was presented to your board June the 24th of last year. District engineer Bob Gressens has represented the staff and is the current liaison to our committee. Fire Chief Mark Miller attended our May 20 meeting of last year also to explain the emergency response programs. And Directors Caldicott and D'Amico have represented the CCSD board. Next slide, please. The history and activities. We did develop the emergency plan to respond to a catastrophic system failure. It was presented to your board June 24th of last year and accepted. I did state that before. We've continued review relating to the drought conditions. The code chapter 4.12, emergency water conservation program and surcharges. Next slide. committee recommendations regarding that chapter, 4.12, Emergency Water Conservation Program. Some provisions of the program are useful and should be utilized, i.e. provisions for running the hydrological demand model to determine the trigger points for each stage of the surcharges. Adding at least one additional stage would be useful, allowing a more gradual implementation of the surcharges depending on the severity of drought conditions. Next slide, please. Commercial accounts should be able to request and possibly pay for a threshold review to have their base allocation modified following a water usage audit. The next bullet item is surcharges will apply only to the commodity used above each suggested stage as shown. In other words, stage 2 would equal 12 units, stage 3 would be 8 units, and stage 4 would be 6 units. And that is based on the bi-monthly billings and reports. Next slide, please. Stage 1, the current program endorsing voluntary conservation should remain in place. Stage 2, the demand model run predicts that aquifers will provide less than 70% of the ordinary demands. Next slide. Stage 3, demand model run predicts that aquifers will provide less than 50% of ordinary demands. In stage 4, demand model runs would predict that aquifers provide less than 30% of the ordinary demands. And filling of the committee is that the rate structure, the surcharges, provided directly in the table which follows. The next slide. Here you see what the surcharges would be, and they are, they do increase as the usage goes up. And like I said, this is the same as what is in the code now. And this would be the same for the commercial uses also. Next slide. Stage 3. This would be if the demand model predicts that the aquifers will provide less than 50% of ordinary demand. And it goes through basically the same that I had on stage 2. The water allowed without surcharge would be 8 units per residential connection, or EDU. 9 units per residential connection, or EDU, will have surcharges added. The surcharge penalties go up 100% from stage 2. And you can see that on the next slide. You can see there was there would be no surcharging 0 to 8 units. Then again, there it would go up 100% from stage 2. This would be stage 3, and you can see how it does increase once again as more units are used by the household or the commercial use. Then going on to stage 4, the next slide, you got it. The model would predict that the aquifers will provide less than 30% of the ordinary demand. And there again, the same thing. Now, in this case, the water allowed without surcharge would be 6 units. That's, again, per billing cycle. That's 2 months. And 7 units per connection would be surcharged, and the penalties would go up 150% from stage 3. So the next slide would show how those suggested surcharges would affect the different usages there. Again, 0 to 6 units, there would be no surcharges. And that is per billing cycle. That's 2 months. And then again, you can see how it does go up considerably. Next slide. These are suggestions that the committee is making to your board. The committee suggests that the CCSD board be informed of well levels and other criteria during a sustained drought and run the hydrological model, demand model, is required to trigger the recommended surcharge stages. Your board should also inform all the community users of the demand model results as soon as possible so that voluntary conservation can be initiated prior to various stages being adopted and implemented. Next slide. It is recommended that during stages 3 and 4, CCSD read the meters monthly and inform users of the amounts used. The committee reaffirms all the policies in the current CCSD code with the exception of the recommendations stated. It is also recommended that your board have staff contact all agencies involving, including the CERT, which is the Community Emergency Response Team, to implement the emergency plan developed to respond to the catastrophic system failure, and that was presented to your board last year, June the 24th. Next slide. It is also recommended that all the recommendations made to your board from the WEAC be given high priority and be part of the CCSD's current goals and objectives. And with that...
Directors, do you have any questions?
I have a question.
Yes, Alan.
Have you proven the correlation between the model and actual well status during a period of time over the years?
I don't believe so. I'm going to really pass that on to Bob Gressens, your district engineer. There was a correlation, I think, when the first that stage, which is now stage 2, when that was implemented, I think there was a 15% less usage. There was that much conserved, but I don't know if that answers your question. Bob, why don't you go ahead?
When the model was developed, there was a Kenny Jenks report back in 2000. It was a very detailed it was a regression type analysis that they did. I think it was it's statistical analysis, so it could be off, but it's projecting a dry year coming up. I haven't run the full model yet to look at what the demands were to go through all the various steps, but I do monitor that Southern Oscillation Index on a routine basis just to see what it's showing at the moment, and that's what it's indicating right now.
But this is a key element of your whole process of penalties and no penalties, whatever. And to use that as a basis, you have to have some confidence in that model, correct?
And I'm sorry, I didn't fully answer your question.
No, he didn't.
The Kenny Jenks report made some projections between the increases in the rates versus the goal of reduction. There was some theoretical projecting done in that report at that time that if you increase rates by a certain amount, you're getting a certain reduction.
Director D'Amico?
I hope you say he didn't answer your question.
No.
Okay. Bob, listen.
He's trying.
Let's forget how to model. You got the model what year? 2000?
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
We've had it 10 years.
Mm-hmm. How's it working?
His question was, if you ran it for the last 10 years, we didn't, let's assume, well, we had actually two, didn't we have two, I guess in 10 years we had two emergencies.
Yeah.
But the question is in the real world, because as soon as you told me Berkeley, that scared me, but that's another issue.
PhDs.
Yeah. In the real world, you run the model. You ran it in April. Have you ever actually looked back and said, wow, it was exactly spot on by August, or was it completely fouled up by August? Yes or no?
I cannot recall. What I've done is looked at the trending of the Southern Oscillation Index.
Is there any correlation between running the model as a predictor of what really happened to the well water? Do you understand my question, though?
Yes, and I'm trying my best to recall when we had the surcharges implemented last, and I'd have to come
even
back
in a
with
wet
an answer.
Year.
I don't
even
have
even in a wet year. Even if it says, "Oh, you're going to have plenty of water," doesn't it tell you what's going to happen with the wells? Is it going to be drawn down 20%, 30%, 80%, 90%? Isn't that what you're trying to do?
But the model, I believe it indicates what type of year to expect coming up as, you know, subject to the limits of statistical.
In your professional judgment, are you're saying that you really have no opinion as to whether this thing is at all a good or bad predictor after running it? I don't know how many times you've run it, to be honest.
You know, I'm not prepared to answer the question.
Okay.
I can come back in a future meeting and answer it. What I have done is looked at the Southern Oscillation Index table, which is historical data, and compared it to my understanding when we had drought years, and did see where there was some trending between a high Southern Oscillation Index value and some very dry periods.
Right.
I've done that much. But as far as the few times that we've run it, I have to research that further and come back with a better answer. I'm just not prepared to answer it right now.
I would like to add that there's more components in that model than just the Southern Oscillation Index. And, Frank, you know, you were part of this committee. The estimated dry season duration, the existing and estimated demands for that dry season, and also the aquifer levels in those well fields. So it's just not running that model. I mean, we have to go by, and I think even John Lindsay has spoken in his articles about the Southern Oscillation and what that means, the temperature of the water. So is it perfect? I don't know. But, you know, you were part of the committee also.
No,
this is our best approach that we came up with. Now, there was two components, actually. We gave you an emergency plan that was what we would do in a catastrophic situation, earthquake, the lines break, that sort of thing, fire. And this is the approach that we took to develop this. Mm-hmm. Is there another way? There may be.
No, we got to bifurcate this. The question he's asking is a valid question. This has to do with, in the event, through the great decision-making of the board, with all the information available to it, says, we're going to stage two. Okay. Then we go to stage three, because we see the wells dropping. This is really what you do when you make that decision. And that's
correct.
Just so you know, I mean, I 100% endorse this. This is, they have worked very hard, and there's been a lot of angst back and forth. A lot of discussion and
Correct. Pulling.
You know, do you want to go to 200% penalties, 150%? Well, when you get to stage four, 30% of the wells, and if you're still in the middle of July or August, you got a problem, and it should be very penal.
Formula in running that model.
But it would be fun to find out if, had he run those predictions, what did it in fact, even in a wet year, predict a wet year reliably? That would be good to know.
Absolutely.
Well, if we referred this back to staff, one of the things you could say is run the model for the past 10 years and see what happened. You know, first seems to me simple. There. Now, but also, I'm sure that the staff may have some questions, too, in relationship to how do we do this. Plus, we're going to have questions of staff because there's going to require changing in code and stuff. And so what we really will – this is a good report.
Thank you.
Extensive report, and it gives us some guidance. But I think we now have to probably go to staff and answer your question. Does it really work? Or is it – what level of credibility do we give to it? You know, do you give it only 25% of the model, or do you give it 50%, or do you give it 100% credibility?
Mm-hmm.
So it seems to me that we could probably refer to staff to say, tell us how credible it has been. Because we now have the history. They surely could run the model, I would think. You're more of the expert in this. You know,
that is one of the, again, it is two separate things. One is we've had a weird policy. We have a document in our green book, but then when it comes time to surcharges, it's something else that somebody dreamed up.
Yes.
What they're trying to do is to get the the code, if you will, locked in with a means of going through and working and administratively, functionally carrying out a surcharge program.
Yeah, and I think that's where we need staff to tell us how do we make those alterations in the code.
Right, with counsel and that. Right. And there's a couple of things just not to when the comment, and you put it in there about reading the meters more, we're going to need some feedback on what that would take to do.
I think that's key, reading the meters. We could probably read the meters every month anyway. I think that's becoming more automated. Yeah. But I think the key is page 6, where they're talking about commercial accounts being able to be surcharged based upon previous usage as opposed to their EDU allocation. It's been in the 1990s and maybe before when we said, this laundromat gets 20 units and the laundromat isn't even there anymore. You can surcharge them to death. They don't care. You have a restaurant that was small at one time and now they're a big restaurant. They're being unfairly surcharged. What I believe they're trying to do is say, look, here's a user, and if they can save 15%, that's a real savings. It's not going to put them out of business. They're going to try and save that 15%. So how can we charge the over usage from previous years as opposed to we should even, I don't know, not a goal this year, but it would be a goal during my term here, is to come up with an idea of maybe having unit 1, unit 2, unit 3, and unit 4 actually charged for, so that if you're, instead of being charged for, if you'd be not being charged, surcharged over 12 units and you only use 6, you're not going to save. Why don't we make it so that the person who uses 6 will go down to 5? So anyway, it's beyond the scope of this particular year even, but I would like to see people incentivized to save from their previous use. And I think page 6 kind of talks a little bit about that, where they should be able to request a threshold review and have their allocation modified. I think that's key.
Any more questions of Irwin?
I don't know how much time we want to spend on this, but
okay,
I have a couple.
Okay.
Stage 4, yes. Do you ever authorize a cutoff? For instance, a major user like San Simeon Parks, that's a sacrosanct. Is there something of that nature in your recommendation? Somewhere where you cut off major, really significant users
like the public users? Is that what you're speaking of?
Yeah, like the school.
Yeah, that's addressed in there, and we did bring that up, but we really didn't take a look at it. Okay. And a lot of those public users, there should be some sorts of penalties, but if I recall, they don't really get notified until we're down into the other stages. So I think right up front, when we get to even stage 1, they should be notified. No more landscape, irrigation, that sort of thing.
And they would have to use like gray water to contract gray water or something like that versus using potable water.
And then there's a discussion about even utilizing where
accounts should be able to request and if possible pay for a threshold review to have their base allocation modified following a water usage order.
Yeah.
In that regard, I think it's important, and that's something that we talked about back and forth. I didn't think the committee or we should be doing that our own, but it should be something for the board to think about.
Think about, okay.
We're going to do we have to do something with our ordinance because the penalties are not, there's no correlation between what we call the surcharge program and the document. So if we that's a task, somebody starts doing that. The question then becomes, is this an administrative issue? And should we endorse that? And I think so, because what will happen is it's almost the good restaurant, let's call it the good restaurants, who put in better washed dishwashers, put in the low-flow toilets or the non-use. I know McDonald's, they have the non-water urinals, the waterless urinals now. It saves a lot of water. So if they put those type of things in and they're showing that they're doing all of this and they put maybe a xeriscape garden outside, so now they've cut down, the question becomes is, do they lose that? What benefit do they get? And to his point, if they have greater use, and they have, it's not that they're wasting water. And that was a big issue. They're not wasting. I mean, if our purpose is to stop, number one, wasteful water use, then in emergency, we don't care what kind, you got to cut back even on your sanitary use. That's the surcharge program. But as a general program of conservation and better use of the water we have, that's something that, because we have a lot of commercial users, they're big water users, no question about it. And if people, if they see that through their own positive actions, mm-hmm. they can get a little leverage to it, if you will, or a little better acknowledgement of their EDU usage, I think it's beneficial.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Okay. Thanks.
Okay. Any other questions? I have a question.
All right.
Is our task complete?
I would say at this point your task is probably 99% complete.
Okay.
What I would suggest uh-huh. is that hopefully that this will go to staff, and maybe
we're willing. I'm willing to work with staff.
Work a little bit with
sure.
them as a review, so that they have the breadth of
okay.
your knowledge of what
right
going
and
on.
And the rate of compensation will be the same, correct?
Yes.
Okay.
Oh,
I got one other thing. We've been in this about 2 years, and I want you to realize we're the Emergency Alternate Citizens Committee, and we've done pretty well these last 2 years as far as rainfall, so you guys are on your own now.
Okay.
Okay.
You gave us our last big rainfall.
As far as we know. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Earl.
Okay.
Mr. President?
I've got some requests to speak.
Mr. President, just before we do that, is it the consensus of the board that this is something we're now going to take the next step with, try and get it into an ordinance, or?
Let's hear from the public first, and then we'll bring it back and make that decision. I've got a request from Amanda Rice, and then Steve Figler, and then Jerry McKenna.
Thank you, President Clift. I was an alternate member of the committee, and just a couple of points that I want to make. The first was that the State Department of Water Resources requires every 5 years that agencies that serve 3,000 connections or more than 3,000 acre feet have to complete an urban water management plan. And our new one is going to be due on July 1st, 2011 is the deadline for it. And most of the things that this committee discussed are things that are required to be elements in that urban water management plan. And so hopefully some of these issues will come up again as part of that process, because that will have to be approved by the board before it can be sent to the state. The urban water management plan. Second, regarding the surcharge thresholds, the amounts, the 12 units, the 8 units, the 6 units, wasn't determined from actual current usage. It was just based on, you know, what's been used in the past for the cutoffs, and the fact that less than 6 units is essentially just included with your the fact that you have water. So less than 6 units didn't make sense to do. But I'd like to just make a really quick statement about, to help people who are watching this and maybe even help you guys understand what it means when you say 12 units. 12 units is 147 gallons per day. So if you're saying you have to use less than 12 units, that's a reasonable amount. And what actually happens in terms of reducing. So hopefully monthly bills would help get that reduction sooner. And I really hope that the catastrophic emergency plan, which is also an element of the urban water management plan, is addressed too, because that's an incredibly important element. And I look forward to seeing what action is taken on this. Thank you.
Thank you. Steve Figler.
Hi again. The title is Water Emergency Alternatives Citizens Committee. I'm wondering what the mission of the committee was. I'm wondering if there was a statement of the mission, because I've been through this three times and by hand and heard the presentation, and all I've been able to encounter directly from it is economic disincentive for using water under certain conditions. And I fail to see how that's in all water, how that encompasses water emergency alternatives. And I was extremely happy to hear Mr. D'Amico suggesting that there are alternatives that are not directly economic disincentives, such as providing either having us outright buy or the district itself increasing its, I believe it was $2,000 for the district, for the entire district, to help people buy water restrictors or low-flow toilets or whatever. $2,000 is ridiculous for 4,200 people. I would I go back to my initial question. What was the mission? Was the mission simply to come up with disincentives, economic disincentives for water use under emergency conditions? I don't see any mission here, but that's all that was come up with in this document. So I would suggest, rather than being 99% complete, that it's about 20% complete. And perhaps the check is not in the mail.
Well, you have to understand they have previously made a report, too, on a lot of the other parts of it. This is only one part that's been reported.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Really, they really did talk in terms of the more direct,
yeah,
what do we do in the case of emergency and how do we get that plan.
Well, let me suggest in the future, then, that when you come up with a document like this with that as a title, that you have some sort of a one-page summary of the other things that have been done.
Noted. Steve.
Okay. Thank you.
Jerry McKinnon.
Yeah. Well, Jerry McKinnon, please forgive me for my simplistic approach to this. I think of it like my wallet. I have so many dollars in my wallet. If I spend them just like that, it won't last me a week. So maybe I've got to measure it out. And maybe I'll set a goal and I'll make the money last until the 1st of February. And then what do I do? Well, maybe I better figure to make it last until the middle of February, because, well, maybe a check will come in the mail, or maybe something will happen that'll put something back into my wallet again. I don't know. So my question is there an actual measurement of water in the aquifers? How many gallons of water are in that aquifer? What is the shape of the aquifer? Is the aquifer like a funnel that's narrow at the bottom, and when we get down to the 5-foot mark, we get saltwater intrusion? How many gallons of water do we have? It's kind of like my wallet, my checkbook. So when the well levels get down to a certain level, you're going to impose a penalty. When it gets down to another level, you're going to impose a penalty. I think we should be talking about well levels. That's because we're dealing with water, a product of water. And pretty soon it gets down to the level where we say, damn it, I wish we'd put in that desal plant. Thank you.
I have no other.
He did a very good job at how he handled the trespasser. Unfortunately, the legal service let them, the legal penalties weren't there, and he is now incarcerated. And the only thing that really would pertain to the CCSD that I think is important is there was a complaint about trash
overflowing the trash bin up on Bridge Street near Lynn's. I took a look at it, and yes, it's overflowing. But I looked at all the other trash bins, and they seem to be empty. So perhaps there's a Mission County forgot about it, or we need additional trash cans. I think it's a subject that's going to come back to us more than once. And you know, I'd be more than willing to volunteer on some kind of an ad hoc committee to see if we can address it. But that's all.
Okay. And I attended a meeting with the healthcare district. It was a very cordial and very productive meeting. We agreed that no matter who had control of resources, whether they were CCSD resources or whether they were CCHD resources, they were actually resources of the citizens of this community, and that we would look at them in a coordinated basis and see what could be done. The committee directed its staffs to get some preliminary numbers together as to whether there is any potential savings from reduction of redundancies and staff combining. And they will bring that back, and then that could be the basis for moving forward. I want to always, each month, let you know what's going on in that thing and make sure that we're working in the right direction. So I'm kind of, unless you say otherwise, we will continue to see if there are reductions. And we're looking for a time period of probably by next month being able to give you some of those information items to make a decision on. Okay? No other committee meetings or people attended any committee? You want to take a break or you want to go through the consent? Nothing was pulled. Then, so they're approved on a single vote, so I'll entertain a motion to.
I make a motion that we approve the consent agenda.
Okay. Second.
All right, I have a motion and a second to approve the consent agenda. All those in favor,
do you want me to read the items?
Do I?
Do you want me to read the items?
Yes.
It's up to
would
you.
Would you please read them for the record?
7A is to approve the expenditures for the month of December 2010. 7B is to approve the minutes of the Board of Directors meeting December 13, 2010. And 7C is to consider Resolution 01-2011 nominating CCSD representatives to the SLO County RAC, which is the Water Resources Advisory Committee.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Passes unanimously. Before we start the fiscal audit, I'd like to take a quick break.
We'll make it short.
Let's be back at 3:15.
Great.
Real quick. Okay, we'll call the meeting back to order, and we'll go to item 9A, receive the fiscal year 2009-2010 comprehensive annual financial report. Manager Rudock?
Thank you. So this is the annual audit for the fiscal year ending June 30th of 2010. So it's the fiscal year 2009-2010. Just for a brief background, because Bob Crosby has been extremely patient sitting here for 2 hours, the cost for this did not exceed the budgeted amount of $14,500. And I appreciated that Al Labossiere included in this report that we did call upon Bob Crosby. He is a certified public accountant, and throughout the year, he has done other things for us, and he's never charged us. So I want to recognize that, and I actually underlined it, and we probably should have underlined it in the report. So we're going to introduce Bob Crosby in a minute, and he'll present the brief summary of the audit. But for background, I want to make sure you know that I typically try to schedule an audit exit meeting, if you will, with the executive or the vice president and the president of the board, okay? And so that did occur on January 10th. And then Al, as regularly reported, saved the district anywhere between $7,500 and $10,000. That's what my colleagues have paid in the other Slo County special districts in order to get this analysis prepared. So I want to thank him for all of that work. It was a lot of detailed. And then I'm now going to present Bob Crosby. And we're here, too, for questions. And Al LeBossier is here as well.
Welcome, Bob.
Thank you for having me here. And it was a pleasure to work with Tammy and Alan this year. This, I don't know how many times I've done this audit over the years, about seven times, I think. And this one went the smoothest. And that's part of the reason I can pass off these items. They call me up during the year, want an analysis or something like that. I don't mind doing it for them because they're so organized here. This has been a treat. And I don't just say that. It has been a treat this year. So some of the first years are pretty ragged, but the financial statements, like Tammy was saying, the auditor's report, we gave it an unqualified opinion, no items of disclaimer or adverse opinions of any kind of nature that should be otherwise noted other than the ones that are required in the report. So these reports keep getting longer and longer because of the powers that be. So you'll see two extra paragraphs there that weren't there when I first started out in accounting. So, but don't let that alarm you. There's nothing there to that's out of the ordinary. And I'm going to start on page 4 because last year I started on page 3 and I got chastised for that. Page 4.
It's for the one week. It's your page 4.
My page 4, not the management discussion analysis.
It's past the MD&A. Go past the MD&A, which is. So start on page 65, Al says.
Oh, it has. Oh, okay. You have your own page numbers on there.
Yeah,
okay.
The MD&A is the first part of the CAFRA. So
the 63 is your auditor's letter.
Correct.
Okay, so 65 would be the page. This statement of activities is the new GASB 34 method of showing your income statement. And it is kind of a peculiar document because it starts on off to the side and then it works its way down. And it's not like your ordinary income and expense statement. It starts with expenses and then goes to income and then it goes to the other items as it bends around the page. So The line item of importance for the district, to summarize this, is the line, three lines from the bottom, changes in net assets. That's like your income statement, income or loss. And it shows a loss for the district for the year. That could be disturbing to some people. To me, yes, it's a little bit disturbing, but when you add back the non-cash items like depreciation, you're going to see that there's a profit there. Also included in that number is what Tammy was mentioning, the GASB, the Government Accounting Standards Board, number 45. We had to put an additional expense in there for the OPEB adjustment, which is the other post-employment benefits that were calculated by Alan. Alan did a wonderful job as far as doing the actuarial information for the district. In fact, it was kind of nice to go through that with him because I've actually used that on other districts now because of what Alan did. So it was helpful. But, yes, there was a loss. It looks a lot better than last year. That's partly due to the rate increase. Could it be better? Yes. I think that just by breaking even, this indicates that the district is funding the infrastructure, meaning the depreciation. Unfortunately, it should probably be at a positive number because the infrastructure that's being depreciated is at a historic level, which is typically less than what it would cost to replace it or to fix it. So, but in a nutshell, page 65 is the activity for the district. Now, going back to page 64, statement of net assets. This is typically a balance sheet, except it's missing the last line, which would cause it to balance. That's not a typo. It's just because that's the way the powers that be want to present the financial statement for these governmental units. This is a breakthrough statement because what it does is it now puts all the funds for the district on the same basis of accounting, the accrual basis. And before, which we do have included in here, the old model is also included, which shows the government fund. When I see things on TV like the city of Los Angeles, where they have constant geysers blowing up in the street because of the infrastructure blowing out, that's a good sign that their financial statements may look good, but their infrastructure is crumbling beneath them, and it's a very serious issue. And these issues, just watching what was going on here today for the last, 2 hours, would indicate that you guys are right there discussing the issues that should be discussed, and that mainly where are we going from here, what should we spend our precious money on, what should we do as far as making our infrastructure work for the citizens of the community. With that, keeping in mind that the economy's not the best in the world right now, and the citizens of this community are stressed with limited resources, knowing that a rate increase has just happened. We've got to make this thing work, and we've got to do it in a manner that is, and you guys all know that, that's going to best serve the citizens of the community. So, but from what I've seen, the financial statements of the district look strong, a lot stronger than some of the other districts that I do, and it's encouraging. Any questions? I mean, I can keep going if you like. I can talk forever, but
just a quick thing. On page 65, when you're talking about the essential net loss, the third one from the bottom, you said that we saved some money on calculating OPEB, but OPEB or any contribution to such is not included in this at all, right? Is that correct?
No, it is included. We've actually accrued the liability let me explain what's happened. In the past, the districts pay as you go. That adjustment's in there for the direct expense. You are paying as you go.
And
there's a separate. It's combined. I'd have to get the action. We have a footnote in the back which explains the expense,
It's not in this first column on the left.
Well, it's included. That's a very summarized.
It's in administration.
Administration,
right.
You think?
Okay. Right.
The footnote's on page 87 for OPEB.
Footnote's on page 87.
87 for OPEB.
Which would show the required disclosure for OPEB.
And I really wanted to discuss that, if you don't mind, because it is the first year you're seeing it, and it is something that the board directed us, to do, or that we volunteered to do. And I don't want to steal the thunder from Bob, but and I think maybe you can kind of just introduce it, and then we can add some on page 87. This is the first time you're seeing the OPEB, and this is as a result of, and this is his format as the auditor based on the results of the actuarial analysis that Al Abbasir did. So. I don't know if you want to introduce it and talk about some of these numbers and what they represent.
What I try to do is make this as concise as possible so it's easy to read. I do searches of the Internet for various financial statements. Usually the financial statements you see on the Internet are from people that are really proud of their financial statements, so it's a good source to get ideas for these footnotes. The firm that I actually nabbed this from was a firm I used to work for down in Orange County, D.L. Evans and Company. So if it looks familiar with some of their statements, I plagiarized it a little bit. But essentially, it sums up all the required items here. And what OPEB is essentially the retirement benefits that are offered to the retirees that work for the district.
And for us, that's health care.
There's numerous ones, but for your district, it's health care. If there were no benefits that were offered to the retirees, then we wouldn't even have to do this. So some of the districts that didn't have this felt a little bit upset because I didn't put it in. But in this particular situation, at the bottom, I summarized the required information. And then the top portion basically explains what it is and then indicates the total expense from this. And then the bottom portion of it is, you'll see the numbers are a little bit lower. It's because of the present value factor that was factored into the calculation here. So from the measurement date, which was June 30th, we're looking at $6,864,000 in required cost over the lifetime of the beneficiaries. Okay? That sounds like a lot. It is a lot.
Because it's a doomsday look. This is your general manager speaking. This takes every employee that was here at that time and busts them out to their actuarial age, including the existing employee.
That minus from the – we should be having
– The second line down there.
414. $464. So we're short the difference between the $148 that we're paying,
right,
and the other on a doomsday,
right,
situation.
Okay. Right. So I have some districts where an employee theoretically just could work 1 year and get these benefits for, which is terrible. Essentially, what's happened is this is a calculation that the Government Accounting Standards Board said, hey, this is a bombshell ready to go off. And what it was meant to be was a motion of goodwill to a retiree that they really appreciate. Hey, well, heck, we'll take care of your benefits. And as a result, look at the results from this thing. So it's a very scary number. We've got a few scary numbers here, too, which is this, and then with the investments with the retirement plan, PERS, you're seeing the percentage contribution rates going up. So these are very scary numbers until the economy can start turning around and start producing some income for these retirement plans. You're going to see these contribution levels go up. And on the flip side, too, is that the citizens of the community, a lot of the citizens here are on fixed incomes, and they're experiencing the same restrictions because their investment accounts aren't getting the same returns. However, last year, if you invested correctly, you could make some pretty good money. But with these last couple of years, this has been very tight for a lot of people. So just to say, well, we're going to increase the rates can be pretty hard on some people. And if it gets too bad, you start seeing some pension plans, not that they're happening, but over some throughout the country have actually gone bankrupt and left the beneficiaries of those pension plans high and dry. So these are things that could happen, not saying it's going to, but it's something that is on the horizon possibly. I don't want to sound like a doomsdayer there. So
one question that I have, would it be your professional opinion that we begin to set aside some of this depreciation money rather than right now we're on a negative accounting basis because of depreciation, but
right,
we're not really setting that money aside. That's a non-monetary
right
entry, so that we're still showing growth in like life and things. In reality, should we begin to set aside in some form of restricted funds money for infrastructure repair that's depreciation going on right now? And secondly, should we be setting aside some figure? I don't in any way advocate the doomsday thing on this retirement, but should we be setting aside somewhere in between, again, in some form of restricted funds, so that should we find ourselves in this position, we're not all of a sudden in trouble?
Typically, with the OPEB, the monies are put into a trust account, and that's where they go. As far as your question concerning the infrastructure, that's I equate it more like a one of the a condo association or something where you budget for the future. And I think a large part of it is, what is the budget? What is needed over the years? We need to fund this. How is the treatment plant doing? Are we getting geysers in the street? I lived on a street in San Luis where everybody's water main broke. I mean, it was just a matter of time before you... They broke. They actually fixed the street piecemeal. It would have been a lot better, a lot more cost-effective just to run a new pipe down the middle of the street. But they didn't. So, and the homeowner was just hoping that the pipe was breaking on the meter side of the pipe rather than their side, because then they had to pay the difference. So that's the I think that my main concern this year, I think the comment that I would put in my management letter is the district needs to get a firm best guess as to what's needed for the infrastructure of the community and start setting some money aside for that. Fiscally responsible.
Director DeMichel? Yes, again, I'd like to separate different things. We're into capital management. Let's back to the PBOP or OPEB. there's three numbers, two numbers, and I want to make a third. I see the $6,864,101. That is the gross.
That's
the, up in California, Vallejo. They had 400 retirees and surviving spouses. Mm. They dropped the benefits from $1,500 a month to $300. Now, we can't do that. They went through bankruptcy, and there was the viewpoint. We're not in that situation. But we do have upcoming negotiations. Mm-hmm. And I just want to clarify from you and from Alan, this number, even the actuarial liability, assumes our current obligations. If we change our obligations, we change that number. It's not clear to everybody,
yes.
And I want to, we have the community here, and I want everyone to understand, because when you start talking about labor negotiations and you're talking about cutting people's benefits, people get very upset. But this is a real identification of that.
That's based on the simplified method that Alan
wrote. Right. But we're in the realm.
It could be off a little bit.
We're in the realm of a total obligation of $6,800,000 of all and that can be changed. I just want to make
sure.
I didn't want you to say, "Well, you go for rate increase to cover all this." We have options, assuming that all 30 or well, now I guess it's 27 people, but we can change. That's what contract negotiations are all about, and we have to look at that. And that's another one, just the other one that occurred, just so you know, the anti-Illinois, the Utah, and that was, this is from the Wednesday, the 19th journal, nice article on the Utah pension model. And I think I brought up four meetings ago, CalPERS, as far as I'm concerned, that we're not obligated to be in CalPERS. Is that right? Thank
Absolutely
you.
Not.
Council?
There may be some obligation to the existing employees.
To the existing.
But not new employees.
I have, and I will stand by that. I've said it.
Yeah.
We made deals with people. We have contracts, retirees that get all the benefits. I'm a retiree. I get lifetime medical, but I pay for it. I actually pay 45% of it. But the Utah pension model, they went to a 401K. There are governmentally approved separate type pension systems that we could theoretically negotiate. Now, I'm not saying it's not a fiat, it's a negotiation, because we do have standing union contracts and we need to...
I think as we talk about goals, that'll
yeah.
be one of the...
Well, I'm trying to tie it together to real numbers so that when somebody comes up to me in the street and says, gee, you're really tough on people, it's tough on the community. And I want to get this out, because it really irks me, some of the stuff that's in the newspapers and comments, whether it's this Tammy's issue and the payroll issues. These were decisions that were made, and I'm not even I do blame the board made decisions, but everybody talked about the go-go 90s when people bought houses at $800,000 and they're only selling for $500,000. That's the same thing as giving salaries that maybe shouldn't be that high because of the economic conditions we're going now. If we had no recession, if we had no this, nobody would probably be talking about this. So my point is, we have retirees. That's a fait accompli as far as I'm concerned. But going forward, we have an obligation, and we've been chastised for not being active maybe enough. We have to move forward, and it's got. And I'm trying to express it so that our unions, their representatives, and maybe their nationals realize. And they were, by the way, all of these contracts were with unions. Public safety and firefighters agreed, and the SEIU agreed to both of these things. It's not agreement, it's necessity. Otherwise, it becomes inviable. Because how much can we raise rates on the water side and the industry side? And I think this needs to be linked in. So we shouldn't forget today's meeting and today's audit report when we talk about carrying out our goals in the future.
The other comment I wanted to mention, too, I didn't mean to interrupt, is that that number may go down based on staffing levels. So you saw that there was 30 employees, and now there are, 27.
Right.
So, we're obligated to make this part of the CAFRA every 2 years, but Al's already got the spreadsheet developed, so we're going to do it every year, okay, so that you can see that that number may be smaller next year as a result of the staffing cuts.
Question for you, because I heard it said, but I didn't know if we knew it. You mentioned about the contributions we're going to have to make because of an increase in CalPERS requirements.
Well,
we've been thinking about this for a year now.
Yeah.
Has that come about? Have they sent the new rates out?
Yeah, we've got the new rates, and we will be talking about that during the budget time. And
okay.
Then I've got the reports, so that's going to be part of the next budget presentation.
Can I assume that it did go up?
Oh, yes.
Thank you.
Okay. Governmental, you're going to be using different types of assumptions. It's kind of like one of those deals, does a flush beat a straight? Depending on what kind of poker you're dealing with. Most of the time it does, but if you're playing three-card poker, it reverses. So if you're subject to FASBs, you're going to go with the FASBs because they're going to trump the GASBs, okay? But if you're governmental, you're going to go with the GASBs versus the FASBs if there's a conflict. So that's all that it refers to. And I talked to Alan because he mentioned that earlier about this, and we could rewrite that a little bit.
It needs a wording change.
I think so.
It's a great comment from Mr. Barringer because it makes it look like the board made a selection because he and I were meeting on it thinking there must be some resolution whereby the board elected to do this. So it needs a rewrite.
I've got plenty of other items I can stick in there. I try to keep these things consistent. So without rewriting it each time, but I'm up for rewriting that. And if you guys want to take a look at it, that's fine. I've got some other examples, too, that kind of smooth it out a little bit, explain it a little better. So,
any other questions? Okay, we have one public request to speak on this. Jerry McKinnon. You got your wallet out again, Jerry? Yeah, I want to know what's in that wallet.
I'm speaking to you on behalf of other retired employees. I have retired from the CCSD. I say that the way I look at the retirement benefits is your way of saying to me, thank you for your hard work, your sweat, and your dedication to doing your job. And I say, you're welcome. Now, if you offered those things to me, knowing full well that I'm going to live, well, my life now is just little marks on the wall, and they're getting fewer and fewer all the time. So... so that's the way that works. Now, if you'd like to know what my wallet has in it from the benefit that you pay me, we can discuss that in private. But it ain't very much. And the way you're talking, I think what I better start doing is modifying my budget to accommodate for the cuts that are coming down the way. Now, that's without the hat on my head. Now, I'll put my hat on my head and speak to you in other matters. On page 70, you recognize that my interest is this building. This building is a dedicated veterans memorial building, and as such, the community has accepted a responsibility for thanking those veterans who gave their lives on behalf of their country. Now, if we look at the expenditures, the fourth one down says facilities and resources. And when I follow that line across, I see that at the very end is $13,210 that was not spent last year. Is that correct? Yeah. Okay. Does that mean then that $13,210 could have been used for striping the parking lot, for repairing the wood rot in this building, for painting and repairing chipped and worn wood products? Now, I understand that Mr. Crosby said that you are spending precious money, and I appreciate that. But when a budget is drawn up, I think the budgeteers are saying, we can afford to spend these dollars in this particular fashion. And so my question is, do you make allowance for this $13,210 to be transferred into next year's budget? So, in fact, some of these things that did not get done this year can be done this upcoming year? That's my question. Thank you.
Thank you, Jerry. Any additional? If you can make an answer right now.
Well, one thing I would just say with the 13, you know, that's accurate. If 464,000 was budgeted, obviously there's a lot more in there besides Vets Hall, but that's the expenditures. Facilities and resources came in below budget on revenue and actually had a deficit for the year. The way the page is laid out, it has the departments on the expenditures, but things are lumped in the revenue. For instance, all property taxes, which fund fire, facilities, resources, for the great extent.
Analysis, and what I like to do, and it encourages me when I see a board like this that actually reads these things, it's a good thing. And that means that what we're presenting here is something that you can read, and it's in a format that makes it easy for you to read, and these questions are good because you're using this as a tool, and that's the whole purpose behind this thing, is to make the financial statements a tool for people to read and understand. And there's ways to make this even easier to understand. I offer that combining. I also do comparatives where a lot of accountants don't do that. Again, I get on the internet and I look for models. And if I see one of the big boys doing it, that means I'm going to do it too. Sure. So
at no charge?
No charge. I mean, I like working with organizations like this.
It would be like a P&L statement.
It'd be like a P&L statement or a balance sheet.
That'd be excellent.
So it's something to think
auditor.
About.
He's the board's auditor, so you guys can say, you know, we'd prefer to have these types of things to help you better understand your audit.
What you don't see on this is that on each page here, I have an analysis that goes out arm's length. And it's just a matter of sticking it on another page or doing it in a format that makes it easy for you to understand.
Just a quick comment to address Mr. McKinnon's point. I'm a big advocate that if there's money unspent, there's no need that you have to spend it. The government at the end of the year, Halloween was a kind of a fun time. You'd go fly someplace to use up your budget. But on the other hand, if we've budgeted something to improve the Vets Hall, and improving that Vets Hall and keeping it alive would allow us to get more income or establish or retain that income, that's a good thing, too. You don't want to end the year not on plan because you're trying to save money, because that plan affects the next years. So it's just a comment for Jerry.
Okay. Any other questions? If not, can we have a motion to receive and file?
I'll make a motion to receive and accept the report by our auditor.
Do I have a second?
No, second.
Any further discussion? Not all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? None. It passes unanimously. Thank you, Bob.
Thank you.
And thank you for all the other work you do, too.
Sure.
You really do.
All right. Thank you.
Okay. Moving on to item 9B, consider resolution 2011 authorizing a general fund life transfer and budget amendment for early payoff of Oshkosh Capital's capital lease for the CCSD fire engine.
Okay, thanks. So this is one of the reports that has a larger fiscal impact section, but I just highlighted the proposition that we're making here today based on the board direction last month is that we assume that the payoff occurs on the payment date this year, which is May 19, 2011. That regularly scheduled payment for this pumper truck is currently budgeted. It's due May 19, 2011, and it's $49,066. And we broke out to show that the $36,426 is principal, $12,640 is interest. So the difference between this budgeted amount and the amount of the early payoff is $216,141. And that's what we would need to have as a life transfer and a budget amendment in order to make this payoff happen. Based on Al's analysis, total gross savings for the payoff is estimated at $29,189. And the actual savings or the net savings would be this amount less any foregone interest income that would have been earned on the funds used to make the payoff. And you can see there where he's making some guesstimations with regard to what might be a projected interest rate. On page 90, you know, there could be some additional costs and there could be inflation and some increased interest rates, but it's our opinion and, you know, because it's the time frame now, that's probably unlikely that, you know, there would be that much more interest income. So we estimate that the net savings are higher than the potential for a net loss by paying off the pumper truck. So our recommendation is to make the life transfer of $216,141 into the fire department's budget, which requires the budget amendment, as we're requesting, and go ahead and pay this off. Now, there could be some other savings, or if there are any other transactional costs as a result of it, because I will obviously have to probably sign some documents and process some things, we'll bring that back to the board if it's just material or different from this amount. But we don't forecast that right now. Did you ever hear from him, by the way, Al? Okay, so he's made the request for payoff. We just haven't heard back from the lease company.
Mm-hmm. And if we pay it off earlier than the actual date, there's with some savings.
Yes, it's $21.02 per day. Yes. And you know, based on your direction today, we'll do this as soon as possible, as soon as we get the payoff from Oshkosh.
Sure. Okay. Direction from the board?
Well, see, if that was true, I think Goldman Sachs would be putting all their money in LAIF right now rather than treasuries. So, I think it's the right thing to do. It's a depreciating asset. It's not like, you know, we're going to go out for borrowing for, say, the plant or the tanks. But those are assets that are going to be there 20, 25 years, and you're going to maintain them, and they're part of the infrastructure. This is a wear and tear item, and I don't see it. We carrying that continuously that we have been for the last several years, I guess. So that's my motion to approve it.
Your motion is to approve.
To approve resolution 02-2011, okay. Authorizing the general lay fund to transfer and budget amendment for early payoff of the Oshkosh capital lease.
Do I have a second?
I'll second it with a comment. And I agree, and I would vote for this. The issue is that we're being faced with setting aside some funds for other things. So, you know, we aren't really that rich of cash. So, you know, this is something that makes great sense now, but I think we should be careful because we need to start salting away some funds. By the way, I discussed something with Lavoisier about you know, whether we should really start restricting funds. And once you restrict them, you can't get them back. So I like the idea of having a set of cash in LAIF. I think that's a goal we should have.
Dr. Thompson?
Yes, I also like the idea of prepaying the lease purchase. However, my concern was similar in terms of if we do this, if we... where does the $200,000, what line item does it come from right now? And then B, when next year's budget is being developed, is this going to have a potential impact on what we do at that point?
So the $216,141 will come out of the general fund reserves, because and it will go into the general fund department of the fire department. So you'll see it in there, and then it'll be paid out. And so for next year's budgeting, of course, Al and I, when we do it, we won't keep that $200,000 in that line item that it's going to go into in the budget, because we know this is just a one-time event, if that's the question that you're asking.
It was basically, would we have a negative cash impact on next year's budget?
No, we don't have a negative projected in the general funds.
In fact, it should have a $46,000 positive cash, because we're not going to be paying the payment.
No. It is included in this number. So we are not going to have that $46,000. Otherwise, we'd have to borrow more from the general fund.
No, I mean when you went to...
Oh, for next year. The following fiscal year.
Fiscal year budget.
Correct.
Yes.
You'll actually have a $49,066 savings in the fire department budget next year.
Okay. Any other discussion? I don't have any requests to speak on this, so we'll call for the vote. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Passes unanimously. We'll move on to item 9C, which is the discussion and adopt 2011 CCSD board goals. And I'll present this. After our preliminary discussion last month, I took my notes and I reviewed the tape, and I tried to go back and combine where we had some things into some specific goals. And so I divided them up among three basic areas, only just consolidation thing, so that we could be talking in similar areas. I'm not putting any weight to one area over another area. And so what I'm asking is that we adopt as a general basis these goals. The goal to continue to cooperate with the Corps of Engineers, to complete the EIR Stewart Street tank projects and rodeo ground pumping upgrades, to determine the status of SCADA, and determine the requirements for lifting the water moratorium. Those are goals, very specific goals that we can put time on. We can put specific requirements to finding out when, where, and how much on each of those items. In the district administration or organization or however you want to put it, one was a review and revised district fee schedules, and that's across the board fee schedules, all the way from rental of this building to reaching a point in time where they're thinking about retiring. And it's extremely important that we begin to develop some kind of a transition plan as to what we're going to do when those retirements occur and what the district will look like when taking into account possible consolidations, possible opportunities when these retirements occur. Develop planning for any future reorganization of the fire department. Again, right now we have set up the one committee to look at working with the CCHD, but should that fall through, and that information should be available to this, whoever is on this particular assigned this project, the board would know very quickly, and then we can begin to make some decisions about whether we're going to talk with CAL FIRE, although as you read the governor's budget, realignment portion of the governor's budget is indicating that CAL FIRE will be restricting its operations to wildland suppression and will not be involved as much in some of the other things. Now, whether that means contract deals or not, we're both us and both CCSDs through our legislative committees in Sacramento and the county through their committees are trying to determine what that really means. Are they going to, because the county contracts with CDF for all of its fire services, does that mean urban areas are not, they're not going to provide fire service? We don't know that yet. And so some the legislative advocates for both the counties and the special service districts are trying to find out what the governor means and what they're talking about. In the facilities and recreation area, we need to develop what the potential cooperation is with the school district before we kind of go off on our own and plan things. So we need to work there, and we need to review and develop procedures for all CCSD facilities to meet the concerns that Jerry talked about, to meet other concerns about what review and procedures are we going to have for all of our facilities. So that as general basis for goals. Goal being the general statement of where we what we want. And then the next item has to do with a little more of how we get there. But I hope those encompass all the others, and I'm obviously open to any discussion and modification that need be.
Very comprehensive, and I think it hits on, I can't think of anything that I would think to add at this point. This is an amazingly big plate. And I'm not trying to wordsmith things, but I do want to, whether we do it now or at our next meeting, I determine status of SCADA. I'd like to say plan and execute completion of SCADA. It's a big difference. And then the other thing, and we can leave that for the next meeting, complete EIR. I think I'm going to try to ask now, and you can schedule if we should need, I don't want to have legal telling me I shouldn't be asking these type of questions, but I think it's got to be put on an agenda item that we're committed to doing these projects. I mean, at some point now we got to either commit to do them, or this is going to be another study, we've laid out money, it's necessary for fire protection, it's necessary for a good operating water utility, for pressure distribution throughout the system. I mean, I don't know that but I don't see it anywhere that we've said this is a project we're going to do, because it does create the next step, and I'm thinking of our general manager, because if we actually say we're going to do these two projects, then we've got to start preparing for rate increase.
Okay.
And I expect the community to either push back and say we don't want those, we're not going to pay for it. Well, then fine. I know there's no sense in spending another several hundred thousand getting designs ready, but so it's kind of a two-way street, and everybody asks for transparency or whatever you want, openness. So I'd like them to know, and I'd like to know from my fellow board members, are we committed to these type of projects, yes or no? If not, I'm not going to spend my valuable time on it.
I can
studying them again.
No.
It's all right. So
I only used the term determine the status of SCADA to give you a little elbow room if you decide it's not a project.
Oh,
if you decide it's a boat anchor that we ought to throw.
Some of these projects, they're not going to be able to do them all. These goals should be specific. They should be measurable. They should be realistic, and that's a key one, realistic. If we can't make some of these things happen, then we shouldn't have them on this list. And they should be time-based. There should be some end point where we have, you mentioned SCADA, disposition of SCADA. Are we going to dump some of the equipment? Are we going to use it all? There should be, I think, as the president has stated, there's names underneath here, and we should be able to come back and just make them more specific, if impossible we can. Because my concern is the agreement between the board and the staff, and that they say, oh, my God, we need four more people or something in order to accomplish this comprehensive list.
And I did divide this into two agenda items. This agenda item being specific items that we like to see done. The next agenda item has more to do with how we get it done.
Okay.
Which
And Mr. President, if I may, just a quick comment in response to Board Member D'Amico's point about proceeding with projects, the first two items under water. Of course, a decision can't be made to proceed with those projects until the environmental documents have been done and provide then a basis for making those kind of decisions with that information that will be in them. Also, under item number two, I understand that's a negative deck that's being prepared, not an EIR, so perhaps that should simply read complete environmental review for Stewart Street Tank.
And I agree with that. I think it's the same wording in number one because it's an EIR, EIS. You know what I mean? So if we just use the words environmental review in place of EIR,
okay,
that way it covers anything. Okay? So whatever ends up becoming the determination. And I liked Director D'Amico's comments about, you know, we have to all agree as a board that this is where you want us to go. But I kind of think that when these goals are approved, that's what you're telling us, that these are your goals. And I'm hoping these are in priority order. So I appreciated Vice President McKinnon's comments that, you know, if there's going to be a staff liaison, I would like to know that they're in priority orders. I know where my marching orders are as far as staff's concerned.
All right. Okay. Director Thompson?
Thank you. I doubt that these are in priority order because I don't think we've discussed that yet. But I think the list is good. I think it's something to work toward. I would also think that we need to have another discussion as to if we proceed with these, that there's going to have to be some money and it's going to have to be part of the budget discussion. Because Jerry's comment about this facility, if one of our priorities is to do some things in this building, then I'd also like to see money set aside for that purpose or for whatever other purpose. So I think they really have to go hand in hand in terms of those discussions. And just one question. I noted in the audit that last year about $82,000 was paid for SCADA. Is there still a balance due on it? No,
there hasn't been any money spent. That's probably including that $75,000 settlement payment. Remember, that's the majority of it.
Oh, okay.
And the rest of it was probably like the last little incremental billing that we had before, but we haven't spent any money.
So we're done then.
But Jerry Gruber is working with a couple of consultants now so that he is getting in line to be prepared for these committee the potential ad hoc committee assignments so that, you know, he's already started that ball rolling on SCADA.
Right, yeah, and
I just on the SCADA, just because I realize you maybe you didn't. What we have now, and that was a payment we made to a consultant on programming and the like. We have equipment. We own equipment for this SCADA. We've paid for a certain amount of software to be utilized, and all of that is sitting there. I don't know what the number was, but total 200 and something?
Hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Several hundreds of thousands of dollars. And what we need now is a final implementation, design, programming, and put them in the ground. And that's Jerry is working on that now. So
let's change the word to implementation.
Yeah,
I disagree with that.
Yeah, no, that's right. No,
in other words, I think that just because you have a sunk cost in that, I need to understand the importance because there's a lot of other things that we, you know, and these aren't in order of priority, by the way. But I think one of the first things we should do next month is come after some initial discussion, after we get some things, is to put these things in order of priority. Because I just think we need to understand all of these issues first. And then it's pretty clear that Jerry Gruber is going to be involved in the SCADA, and I'd like to be up to speed on it. But that might fall.
We do not know the impact of a desalination facility and pushing desalinated water into this aging water system. We do not know the impact of mixing brine with wastewater, which will then have to go into the sewer system. We do not know the impact of adding 650 residential hookups and more commercial development to this aging system. So my suggested goal number one is to clean our water and sewer house before moving ahead on new capital projects, and that includes desalination. And then I did have goal number two, and then I'll be finished, is to become a fiscally responsible CCSD in all aspects, including salaries, benefits, and all other enumerated goals in the draft goals. We can then have normal business hours and all standing committees. And I would just like to read one last little thing. That this is a letter in today's Cambrian, and it's I can't take credit for the quote. It's from a Mr. Philip Allen, and I think I know everybody in this room, and I don't know. Philip Allen, are you here? Okay, well, then you know who he is. And so I'll just kind of borrow this quote, because if somebody else can say it better than me, I'd rather use their words. It is never cheaper or less costly to solve a problem than right now. So that's it. Thank you.
Steve Figler.
I'm reading a list of the priorities and goals that come from Valerie Bentz, a candidate for the CCSD board in 2010. Number one, upgrade the sewage treatment plant. My understanding is that the current plant uses much more water than current technologies do. This may mean we don't need desalination for more water. Number two, provide for more water storage in small basins on the creek and in storage tanks. Number three, complete the water recycling system that was begun for gray water usage. Number four, retool the administrative structures to cut the extreme overage of expenses for salaries and benefits. Five, reevaluate desalination, providing data on the complete costs, including the cost of buyout of undeveloped lots. Number six, reinstate the publication of public comments in the written minutes. Number seven, reinstate finance and budgeting as a standing committee as opposed to ad hoc. Number eight, develop community forums facilitated by professionals about water, sewer, and fire prevention. And the last one, number nine, have meetings in the evening so that working people can attend. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Oh, also, I'd like this in the permanent.
Please. Elizabeth Bentenhausen.
Thank you very much, Mr. President. I have a quick question about something I just heard. May we assume that your list of goals is in priority order? I think
no.
Your general...
No, I said it was not in priority.
So there's no weighting of any of these. They're just all there equally. And then may I assume under water-related that the change to environmental review suggested by your general manager rather than just EIR would include both NEPA and CEQA?
I would assume, yeah, whatever is required on those.
And that was clear at your last meeting that they both would be then according to that contract. My next point is to underline and agree with completely Ms. Burton's comments about the infrastructure, maintaining that as a goal. The infrastructure as a goal. I think that we are at a point in this community where if we don't maintain, we are going to be in a massive ongoing repair mode all the time. And therefore, to ask you clearly, if I may, will you include in your goals, add to this list, the short and long-term approaches suggested by your utilities manager? When will that be incorporated into this list? Because now water, SCADA has something to do with wastewater, but otherwise this is all basically water, not wastewater. And so where does the infrastructure maintenance for wastewater show up in your list of goals? I would agree very much with Ms. Benz's comment about making finance a standing committee. I realize that it's not until your next agenda item that you address officially your committee list, but there is now no standing committee in the CCSD. There's a committee of the whole, namely all of you, but all the rest are ad hoc, meaning the meetings will not be announced. The public cannot participate in any discussion except perhaps one-on-one with managers until there's a report back after 6 months in some of these, as you'll see, as you did, after deliberation for 3 to 6 months. And so here we are again.
Priorities, they're not not in at all like yours for the most part, but I don't really understand with your first priority of the relationship with the Army Corps of Engineers. The Army Corps of Engineers, for one thing, I understand there's been a lot of contention with the CCSD and the Army Corps. You allowed them to be the lead agency. You've suffered because of it, as has the town and the, what it's caused and then where we are now. I think that going forward, I mean, as we look at the lobbyists' reports monthly, and then we look at where Congress is right now, and the thought of ever getting the 10 more millions or even more that you wanted to get for desal is highly unlikely. And so why would you want to continue a relationship with the Army Corps of Engineers, who you have had issues with, and many, 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 many agencies have across the country, if it's going to be coming to naught with the federal funding? So that's something that, I mean, I would think you'd be looking at. Okay, but on my list, one, true accountability, transparency, openness, for without this, we can't move forward in an honest and accountable way in anything we intend to move forward on. Two, there is an extreme need to take a good, hard look at our deteriorating infrastructure, water mains, sewer lines, sewage control, updating and replacing rusting and corroded pipes, as we saw in that presentation about 2 years ago. Everyone seems to be talking about that, and it's so evident from all that's happening with water mains breaking and the issues that we're having with our infrastructure. Three, take a good, hard look at salaries and benefits and cuts that need to be made. The GM's salary here is just about that twice that of Oceano. Cambria, $166,000, I believe it is now. Oceano's GM, $87,000. And yet the population of Oceano is 1,000 people more than Cambria. In the 2000 census, the median household income in Oceano was $39,000, and in Cambria, $45,000. Properties have been drastically reduced to the economy, and rents in Cambria have always been very reasonable for an Oceanside community, not to mention that prices now for homes are. I think that the $1,250 housing allowance needs to go away. My husband and I maintain an apartment down south, a house here, on half what the GM is making, and nobody gives us a penny for any housing allowance or car allowance, but we manage. All board committees should be standing committees, no ad hoc. Remember transparency? That's what we want, board. Five, Cambria does not need a 50% quality of life increase in water provision. We need to look at moving forward with true vision, as so many communities around the world are doing. Water is our most precious resource, and we need to have ideas to implement the challenges for the future, not at a desal project that will only cost the community much more for installation, but also for the maintenance required on such a choice. I watched a program called On the Nature of Things on PBS the other night about how you can build homes, apartment buildings, hotels that are totally sustainable, energy, water, and sewer treatment. Take a look at this stuff. I mean, it's out there, and it is the future. I would say, since we're not getting anything probably, I would eliminate the lobbying contract in D.C. And I would also look at the expenses. I didn't get this from Governor Brown. I thought about this quite a while ago. Cell phone use, $45 per the staff members that are reimbursed. My cell phone, AT&T, is $50 for the first one and $9.99 for each additional cell phone. So I don't understand why we're paying $45 for cell phones. So I thank you for the time, and I hope you will consider some of what I've said, or all. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, I think that is all. I'll bring it back to the board for discussion. Let me bring something up then. Many of the things that were requested in different modes, I would hope, would be encompassed in things like future salary and benefit program discussions, transition plans for this organization, and that many of the concerns about salary, benefits, those kinds of things would come into play in those things. However, I do have to admit that nowhere in this budget did we take, or nowhere in this list did we take into account the things listed in our utilities manager things for infrastructure things. So I would say, okay. So then we would be making changes of deleting EIR and putting in environmental review, adding the goal of review of the infrastructure. Anything else?
The utilities manager came up actually after he scared me when he walked up behind me and said in that number three, determined status of the SCADA project, phase one of the SCADA project, because it has many phases and this is just phase one.
Okay. With that, what's the pleasure of the board?
I'd like to know that if can we, with the presuming that you're going to have some appointments here, review these things so that by next month we can come back with a recommendation of prioritization of that? And I'd like to be able to do some study on this before we...
My intent and purpose would be that every month we would review or have a request from every committee, whether it's a committee of the whole or an individual committee, or a staff report deal that we could we would redo it every month. And so one of the things we could do next month, if you want, is that we could say, I've been thinking about this and this is my priority list, and we can apply priorities.
Apply priorities
to the
totally to the different goals or within the goal.
I suggest that we prioritize. Right now we've got four, and I guess you got to do water slash sewer if you're going to assess it. But let's to make it manageable, in the water related, we've got a water sewer. You call it utility related.
Yeah.
Okay, utility related, if there's five goals, which are the priority goals and which one do we attack first?
Right, I agree. Yeah. I think okay. We should work on each one.
And district administration and facilities would be, I guess, as board liaison issues. Yeah.
But this is such a big list. I mean, it's ambitious. I like it, but it's so big.
I mean, you know, we can only take one or two goals and make sure we get them done.
Right.
Right.
But I think there are things here that can be done, and some of them, and when you look at them, they are really matters of guaranteeing that this board sees every month that something is moving forward in some of the staff-related things.
Well, I think for maybe Tammy mentioned it or said it, is that once we take these, like let's state a utility one for my benefit, as my understanding is once we have the steward, there's nothing functionally that we will be doing. It sets a goal, meaning that Mr. Gruber and Mr. Greshens and Tammy would be focusing on this, because and this goes back, I guess you were here last month too, is while desal is a big issue and I'm not at all negating it, but we can't let everything be held hostage to that. And what we're trying to say, at least I'm trying to say, is we got to move with these other at least number two, the project, the goals. He's got it to a point where I think they're going to get moving. So it's just a matter of saying every month, where are we at? What are we doing? If they need some encouragement, if some cajoling or some ad hoc decision-making from one or two of us before it comes to the board, I think they have somebody to touch base with, just as much them as us, too.
Right.
Not that we worry about what Mr. Our president and vice president would decide, but, on some of these things, I think some of the other board members need to be called once in a while and understand what's going on. So I think that's, and you're right, some of these things are going to take time and effort, but then again, that means possibly we've got to spend some money, and I thought you were going there, but I think he means spend money to effectuate the decision. We may have to spend money to get a decision, there are people who are expert at these things. And was another item is we did talk about the outside engineer to talk about some of the things about the desal. And so there's you're going to have to spend money besides us five people and our limited time that staff has because they have active jobs to do and active projects. Whether we had this as a goal or not, Mr. Gruber was going to move ahead with Bob and make sure they knew what needed to be done to complete SCADA. But it shows that there's some endorsement by us, and we, you know, we hear from the public. They say they want to hear transparency. This is where we're going unless we hear somebody say, no, we don't want any fire protection anymore, or we don't want any SCADA. And, you know, Jim has some, obviously, he's got decisions to make on it and opinions. That's fine. But we've got to get them out, and let's make decisions. If we find out we were up the wrong creek on something or something, because we haven't had the focus to say we got to get this done. And as long as we come to that, and if we have a focus and says you want to decide not to do it, that's fine. But well, one of the comments was every you know the best way to do it is to do it now, and it's right not only on issues of cost cutting, but also if you want a project done, get it done now.
Yeah.
Because you know. I don't know where rates are going to go, but, you know, you see what's happening in the municipal bond market. I want these projects up and running. I want to go out for bonds as soon as possible.
Sure.
I mean, there's talk of massive defaults, which mean that'll drive interest rates on municipal bonds through the roof. So think of, I mean, everything has a progression here. So these capital projects can only cost us more the longer we wait. And copper's at $5, so every piece of wire is going to cost more. I mean,
that's why I think that we need to prioritize
yeah.
them, because if you're going to lay miles of pipe, you're going to lay miles of pipe, but if you're trying to do five or six other things at the same time,
yeah.
you're not going to get the focus.
That's fine. Well, that's
and
the next.
And we have roughly a dozen possible goals here,
mm-hmm.
and there is a priority, no matter what. There's going to be a number one, number two, number three.
Yeah. Yeah.
And some of these things aren't capital. Some of these things are really quite difficult analysis, and some of them mm-hmm. are extremely important. So, but let's move on. I think the goal, and we should adopt it.
Okay. Make that motion.
I think this is 9C.
Yeah.
I think we approve the adopt the 2011 CCSD board goals.
As modified
by the president, which you've read.
I'll second.
Okay, we have one request to speak here, and I wouldn't normally go back second, but Mr. Figler's been so gracious in his conserving of his other time that I'm gonna.
Yes,
I wasn't sure totally what you were.
Okay, this is simply a question which I think in the last 30 seconds was answered. Are you going to vote on these goals now, which will lock out the goals presented to you by other members of the public this afternoon?
Well, the answer to that is if we vote affirmative, yes. That's the only answer I can give you at this point in time. That doesn't mean that the concerns that were expressed aren't included in many of these goals, and because some of the concerns that were expressed were philosophical in nature, and I think that you can apply that to every one of the goals as we go down through it.
Okay.
Some were specific, but I think that many of them are included in here. Like I say, the one that wasn't included, I wanted to include, which has to do with a review of the infrastructure. And Director Thompson?
I don't think it precludes the board from in the future adding goals as the need arises based upon discussion, based upon circumstances at the time. I don't think we're locking anything out per se.
Right. I agree with that. I mean, we're not going to stop doing business. On the other hand, if we have a very discrete set of things that we want to accomplish this year, we have another year next year when we can focus on some other great things. But, you know, we're still going to do regular business, but at least we focus on this, we're going to get something done.
All right. Any further discussion? not, then the call for a vote. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Passes unanimously. Thank you, gentlemen. The next item is 9D. It's a discussion of board ad hoc committees and approval of appointments for board ad hoc committees and director assignments. Again, I'll lead this, and I want to start it with, again, I put it in these categories because if it's the board's pleasure to have standing committees, they would fit into certain kinds of committee. You missing?
I don't know.
Yeah, 98.
99.
We got to get to.
Oh, they're within the goals.
Yeah.
Well, you were working on the page ahead. Okay. That's all right. Keep your notes on that. When I first, I listened to what the community said about standing committees, and I first started from the standpoint of saying, maybe we ought to have standing committees. And I remember Catherine Hyde indicated that it was only money for staff assistance. So I looked at that, and then I said, well, let's take a look at these goals again. Because if you walk back through the goals of cooperating with the Army Corps of Engineers to complete environmental review, that is really, as you described it earlier, Director DeMico, an ongoing thing in which the staff is working with them all the time, and what we need to know is where it's at and whether they need anything from the board. So I started to look at saying the board can be a committee of the whole, and therefore you would be meeting all of the requirements of a standing committee. It'd be posted. Everybody would know what the discussion is going to be. Everybody would be able to communicate and be part of it. Also, the environmental review on Stewart Street and Rodeo Grounds. Again, those are projects that are way into the process and don't need policy determination by a committee working to try to develop policy, but need, again, the review of the board knowing that those things are happening. So, again, that's one where it can be a couple. Policy, a committee of the whole, and so that every month we're getting a report on that, and it's a discussion item that could be discussed. The public can make input into it, or we can just pass on it. On the SCADA, this is one where I suggest we have an ad hoc committee of very short duration, 3 to 6 months, And the reason I'm suggesting an ad hoc committee is that this is a technical project, and I don't necessarily want to take the board's time as a whole to re-educate me and everybody else on all the intricacies of SCADA. I just want to know whether it makes sense. Is it a good investment? And if it is, I'm going to rely on people that I think have some expertise in it. So I was suggesting we do have two members of our board, Director DeMico and Director Behringer, who are familiar with that system. They wouldn't have to be trained. They can sit with the staff and decide what makes best, and I am more than willing to accept their deal. Again, I suggest that as an ad hoc committee because the purpose of that is to determine some technical items and going through all the posting, going through all the public comment, all of that kind of thing, probably doesn't make sense, and when it comes back to the board, public still has the ability to comment on. The lifting of the water moratorium, again, is more of a legal research and a research of the by the staff to bring to this board as a whole to decide whether we're going to make a decision relative to the deal. So three out of the four of these are not necessarily ad hoc committees. They're committees of the whole. Now, when you get to, like, the review and revised district fee schedule, I'm again suggesting an ad hoc committee because of a very specific task. It can be done in a very specific, should be able to be done in a very specific period of time. But in addition, an ad hoc committee can hold public meetings. And so from the standpoint of revising the district fee schedule, there's some stakeholders who may want to make presentations and may want to have input within. They're not members of the committee, but they can. The committee can hold a public workshop or public, and would be encouraged to do that. When you get to, like, developing a policy for future employee salary and benefit programs, again, it's a policy development thing, a very specific task, can be done in a reasonable period of time, and again, can hold public hold a public workshop to discuss those things. I guess I should give you my opinion as to why I would suggest the directors that are on here. The fee schedule one, I suggested Vice President McKinnon and Director Thompson. Just from the standpoint of Director Thompson getting an understanding of all those things and getting involved as a new person and
killed with just two items. I just had one question on the definite legal definition of workshop. I feel that the Brown Act does a disservice to public organizations. Committees are crucial for any business to operate. But the microphone and 3 minutes and just the world at their disposal as far as what they talk about is very dysfunctional. Can the workshops be limited to interested parties to a finite number? For instance, can you have 8 folks in, still call it a workshop, and have them from across the community versus...
I doubt that you can hand-select who attends.
No, not...
I would not want that. I would not call that a, you know. Now,
There's a question I have
it's
for efficiency.
It would be... I know it's efficient, but I think the combination of a hybrid committee, which is ad hoc for you and the committee members to get basic information, deal with the staff, get a position, get some ideas, and then go with the public. Granted, you may get some comments and things that are off the wall. Anybody gets 3 minutes to insult you.
I'm used to that.
that's part of called democracy.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the hybrid ad hoc committee would solve the economic problems, and the public workshop would still be posted minutes, all of the. No minutes on it?
Not necessary to workshop. And as David just tagged, we're tag teaming here. We've done many workshops here, and they're not even set up this way because you're not sitting at the dais as a board.
Right.
Whoever your committee members are, they can sit there and they run the workshop. So that's why there's no minutes, and
I think it would be within the discretion of the board to decide how it wants to structure something like that, or the subcommittee if it's an ad hoc subcommittee. Of course, it's not subject to the Brown Act. They could certainly choose to meet with a smaller group of people that they invite. At the same time, if the board's direction is to have a public workshop, that the ad hoc committee get that broader input, that's a discretionary call of the board.
But I think we can have this blended committee that can meet both the needs of the public and meet the needs of where we don't have to add staff to be a clerk to the subcommittees.
I was going to ask council, what are the requirements of an ad hoc committee? Do they have to report their results?
There really aren't any requirements other than an ad hoc committee is not a standing committee, does not have continuing subject matter jurisdiction, is typically for a limited term, for specific tasks, that kind of thing.
Right, and once completed, it would come to the board anyway.
Specific tasks, limited time, and eliminated when it's completed its report.
And really no jurisdiction. The jurisdiction right. comes from the board. We just would make recommendations.
Right, okay. Right.
Good.
Right.
Good.
Now, like the one, develop organization transition plan for district, that's being an ad hoc committee, and I didn't include in that the recommendation for a public workshop because you're dealing with some privacy issues of employees who may want to retire, may not want to retire, may not tell us the information so that we can plan ahead. Because they might think, well, gee, if I tell them I'm thinking about retiring, then they're going to do something to me. So there's kind of an employee personnel problem there, too. And I would think any of the ad hoc committees, if they felt a need for public information or for specific information, could call a public meeting or invite specific people. Is that correct, David? Okay. Anyhow, that's and the I've listed some people here. Also, the third category was kind of a liaison positions, which we've traditionally had. And Director Thompson, from his experience with the PROS Commission, and Director Behringer, with his experience with the NCAC, I would recommend they hold those positions. Any discussion?
Interesting. Could we just make a...
Review and development of procedures for one request to speak. Amanda Rice? No, wait. You're on public comment, Amanda. I can't let you talk.
No, I do run.
I get to call Elizabeth Bentonhausen.
You call her when you want.
Outlasted her.
Correct.
I get in trouble for that one. I'm sorry. I apologize ahead of time.
Can we erase that?
All right. So,
can I make a comment?
Amanda, do you wish to speak on this?
Yes, thank you. I was trying to save some paper on the putting in the request. Two things really quick. First thing, government's not supposed to be efficient. Part of why the process is set up the way that it is so that... we are governed by ourselves in a way, and so that the people who are making the decisions have a chance to hear what we have to say and take that hopefully under advisement in their decision-making process, no matter how long or crazy their comments may be. Frustrating as it is part of the process. The second thing is there's a new report out from the LAO about state mandates and reimbursement for state mandates, including preparation of agendas and minutes for meetings. And the board and staff might be interested in reading that. It just came out about how many agencies in the state are actually taking advantage of that state mandate reimbursement for time preparation for meeting and agendas. So I just thought I'd raise those two issues.
Thank you. We have
staff is completely and very familiar with those mandates, and we file every single solitary time, and we get back the big goose egg. So we're constantly on top of that by the district clerk and the finance manager.
So can I have a motion to accept the committee assignments?
So moved.
A second.
Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Passes unanimously. We'll move on then to item 10, public comment. And Amanda, I do have a request for public comment.
Thank you, President Clifton. I'm glad to hear that Ms. Rudock already is on top of that. I did not know that, and I saw that report from the LAO about the agent being reimbursed. Of course, it makes sense if it's a state mandate. First thing, I'd like to say thank you very much to President Clift for his policy of the on-deck comments from the public. It really helps me, especially, to know that I'm not necessarily the next one up. When I don't know who's next, I'm always on edge, and then I feel put on the spot when my name finally gets called. So it's very nice to know, well, first we'll have this person and then we'll have this person, and I know it probably helps other people as well so they can feel more composed and put their comments together in a reasonable fashion instead of worrying about, okay, am I next or am I the one after that or the one after that? For me personally, thank you very much. I appreciate that, and I hope you continue to do that. So that aside, what I did want to speak about is the urban water management plan. It is work, and it's also an opportunity. Some background: the Department of Water Resources implements some legislation that's required by the state in the years zero and ending in 0 and 5. You have to put together an urban water management plan if you serve more than 3,000 connections or more than 3,000 acre feet per year. And the 2010 deadline was extended. It was December 30th, 2010, but it's been extended out to July 1st. It has to be done and approved by then. And fortunately, we don't have to start from scratch. We have a 2005 urban water management plan, and there's only a few changes in what's required to be included, including methodologies for demand management measures and setting baseline targets for the 20 by 2020 SB X7 or something like that, which is the state law that demands per capita water use go down 20% by 2020. The guidebook, the draft guidebook, is already out, and the final draft of that guidebook should be out, they're saying, at the end of January, beginning of February. And it's pretty quick turnaround time, but like I said, you're not going to have to start from scratch, and hopefully you're already on top of that as well. Now, I say it's work and opportunity. It is work because there are lots of things to do, including you're going to have to set baseline so you can set your goals for what your reductions required. We already save a lot in this community, and you're only exempt from setting these goals if you currently are under 100 gallons per capita per day. So if we're over that, which you're going to have to figure out whether you are at that point. But it is opportunity because it means we can see where we are, and we will have a baseline, and maybe it will reduce some of the stress on the watershed, and maybe it'll reduce some of the worry that we don't have enough water because we'll see what the actual use is and hopefully set some goals that will help us. It's also an opportunity to have a good vision for preparing any of the environmental reports, whether it's for Stewart Street tanks or for the desal, because I tell you what, when it comes to going in front of the Coastal Commission for desal, if you have put together your urban water management plan well because of the things that are required in it, you will have in it already, here's what we're doing to cover the demand that we do have. Here's what we're trying to do to make sure that we have all these other things in place.
Other business? Meeting is adjourned.